The recording is on. Sorry, everyone at home, for missing last week, but two out of three of us had an election, so we—I don't know—things were a bit more chaotic. But I think that kind of worked out quite well because episodes 4 and 5, which is that, yeah, 4 and 5, we're on now. They kind of link together, right? Like 4 seemed to be a little bit like the prequel, the setup for 5. Jenny, you've got a hard out today. Is there anything that immediately stands out to you, or do you have any notes that you want to
I have start knocking out? Multiple pages of notes, but I'm not sure really. Like, basically, I just made notes as I watched, as I usually do. I've only had a chance to watch both episodes. I watched both episodes together, and I only have a chance to do that once because it's been a bit of a hectic week. So I don't know if I have anything particularly naturally insightful or like, ooh, allegory. It's mostly just like generally like, ooh, this thing, ooh, this thing. And there was a lot of ooh, this things in the last couple of episodes where I'm like, okay, that's like, there was a couple of questions that were answered.
Mm-hmm.
There was some deep foreshadowing followed by some good payoff or some sad payoff or some bad payoff, depending on your perspective. To be honest, because I've only had a chance to watch it once, I just kind of let myself sink into it and enjoy it. And there was just a lot of, like, yeah, enjoying it. And there's a lot of, I don't know whether or not it's worth breaking it down by characters, maybe, rather than breaking it down because we've got 2 episodes to cover. We, like, go, like, greens and then blacks or something and see kind of where we go, or... just kind of name characters, and I'll delete notes as we talk about them.
Okay. The one that I thought you might be most interested in is Daemon and his visit to Harrenhal.
I have thoughts on that.
So yeah, there's a lot going on. So Daemon sort of raises an army in Harrenhal. He goes up to Grover Tully, who basically is like, I'm kneeling, you know.
No, it's not Grover Tully, it's a strong.
Strong, that's right. Yeah, Grover.
Yeah, it's his cousin or uncle or something. Or
we have them down here, I'm sure.
Uncle? I think uncle. I was wondering whether or not there'd be some strife on behalf of, you know, Rhaenyra's bastards, but I think that's so tangential that there's enough strife going on that he's not going to be that petty regarding who he ever slept with.
Yeah, I think the the House of the Dragon character guys has still not been updated since last season. We've still got Geoffrey Lonmouth down there.
I did think, in all fairness, when he first turned up and he was going through like the haunted, like I literally put Harrenhal is spooky with big letters on spooky. But I did think there was going to be like a Darth Vader moment when he got there, and there was like all of the guys in the like the only room that's functional. I was expecting all of like him to just go absolutely mad dog and just murder them all. Like, there was just the way that they set that scene up, like it could have gone like straight up, I'm just going to kill these guys, or I'm going to sit down and eat the whatever he eats with them and actually breaks bread.
I was there, like you did not know what to expect in that moment, because it was like him entering like a dream almost, where he was going into this castle, into this like haunted nether realm, and and then you've got this, because you look at Harrenhal, it looked abandoned for like, you know, there was like quite a slow paced like you know, sort of like set piece where he was just like, it was raining, it was miserable, it looks like he was walking around an abandoned castle, he couldn't hear a thing, he opens a door and suddenly, oh, there's a whole bunch of people in here, and you know,
because it's one of my favorite things, completely separate from fantasy shows, is when you visit a castle and they've recreated areas to kind of as people would have lived in them. And I find it very disappointing when I go to like historical housing or historical castles where they haven't recreated it, and it just, you can't visualize how people lived. And it just makes so much sense to me that in Harrenhal, which was melted, the stone was melted, you wouldn't bother trying to repair the walls. You wouldn't bother. You would just set up like a couple of basic rooms. And it kind of, it feeds into later on, there's a whole discussion with like Harrenhal being kind of a hollow nest of power. It's the biggest castle, but it's absolutely wrecked. Like, what's the point in it? And it's so spooky and creepy and redundant. Like, I just love how redundant it was.
Yeah, it almost feels a little bit like how over time historically castles like they changed depending on how weapons advanced at the time. So like the invention of siege weapons changed how castles were. And even like the invention of things like cannons and gunpowder changed the way that castles sort of moved over time. So like Harrenhal, built as this like behemoth of an absolute castle. And it was like redundant technology on day one because it's like big castles don't withstand. It doesn't matter how big your castle is to a
Dragon.
dragon, it's a dragon,
I did enjoy like the stone round table in the main meeting room. I'm trying to remember whether how many times we've seen it or if we have seen it in the past, because obviously there was Harrenhal in the original Game of Thrones, and I'm trying to, I think obviously there was some repair work done by the time Tywin took over it, but like the stone table in there felt very round table, and the design of it was a bit more like Celtic-y, old goddy than a lot of the other designs in Game of Thrones. And I can remember noticing that and being like, that's interesting. I also enjoyed the fact that it had Daemon pausing to look at where the Council of Harrenhal happened when he's
Yes, that
exploring the
was really
castle,
cool.
because a lot of the theme of that episode was about the cycle of violence and like when did it begin? Did it begin when the first child died? Did it begin when the second child died? Did it begin when someone lost an eye? And it began with the Council of Harrenhal. It went back to there. And so there was kind of a visual answer to that kind of posed question, which I enjoy when, particularly House of the Dragon has got a good habit of posing a verbal question and answering it visually within either the episode or the next frame. And I really enjoy that.
I think interestingly enough, and this is a little bit like how people in like Song of Ice and Fire readers sort of obsess over the opening chapter. I have seen so many video essays breaking down that prologue, going beyond the wall. I've read it myself dozens of times, like I know almost know it word for word. And because
As cold opens.
it's and the thing about how like so Song of Ice and Fire and Blood, like the showrunners had to start the story somewhere. There had to be like a prologue of sorts or a genesis or a beginning or whatever. And so presumably the if this show is about the Dance of the Dragons, it would be the thing that set them down that trajectory. So the story begins at the beginning. There's a reason it started there. And then when Daemon came through, it was almost like it was a reminder of that. Like it's a reminder of it, because it was the softness of Viserys, really, the unwillingness to confront hard truths that kind of led down this path.
It was Jaehaerys who was like, I've fucked up my line by not producing any male heirs, and all the female heirs are weird or wonderful or just not quite right or female. And so I'll pose it to the realm. Like, it kind of, it goes back even before, like, it goes back to that council. Like, if ever there was proof by the end of the second episode in this set, like, Rhaenys is the queen. Rhaenys should have been the queen. Rhaenys ought to have been the queen. Like, if we go back from, if you take the thread from Harrenhal to the end of the next episode, I'm like, Rhaenys should have been the fucking queen.
It's a little bit like how, like, it's a little bit like in with this with Game of Thrones. It's like Stannis, right? Okay, wouldn't have been a wouldn't have been a great king. Maybe not have been a disastrous king, but who's his daughter, Shireen. Everyone acknowledged she would have been flipping amazing, and we were pretty sure that Stannis was sort of, well, he said on several occasions he named her in line for his throne. So a lot of Game of Thrones, there was, oh, it could have been so much of a better yeah. queen or a better king.
But it's wonderfully Greek tragic, isn't it? Like that's what makes it so. In the same way that what I love about this series versus Game of Thrones is it really captures the what if and people's choices. Like when you, I mentioned it last podcast with Ned's plotline in season one, where when you first watch it or read it, you get completely, you know, blown out of the water by the ending of Ned. But when you reread it, you're like, oh my God, every thread was there. Mm. Every, like, the setup was so blatant that of course he was going to get beheaded. There was no other option. He really fell into every pothole. And I'm enjoying the kind of inbuilt tragedy of this series where we kind of know where it's going even without spoiling. Mm. Because we've seen Game of Thrones. We know the Targaryen dynasty is depleted to nearly nothing. The North Dragons die out. And so we know it's on this downward spiral. And so whenever there's like a little Easter egg of like, but what if, it's just so tasty and depressing.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with any prequel is that, like, you already know where it ends. Like, does the world get better? Not really. So we know that there's a... I don't know, actually. Actually, this is interesting. I was going to say, we know there's not a good ending. However, is the moral of this particular story actually the fact that most of the dragons getting wiped out or sort of becoming feeble is a good thing?
Well, they if we're going into that tangent, they definitely pop that into play quite a lot. The nuclear war, deterrent, they literally say, like, you know, unleashing this would be something along the lines of a deterrent would be enough. And because we're not going to release them, they won't. They'd be foolish too. And, you know, Rhaenyra made the first dragon attack. She actually is the first one to release the nukes. And then they show on in the end civilians. Of the second episode. Yeah. How horrifying dragon attacks are.
Yeah.
She pushed the red button and released the Red Queen.
Yeah, but she sort of did. She could have ended it there and then by going off, just like firing them all up. But she didn't. And then, but she did end up killing a whole bunch of commoners, as of course did Aegon. So.
Yeah.
But going back to Daemon in Harrenhal, so we were introduced to Alys Rivers, who. Several.
Cool. I don't know much about her, but she seems so cool.
Several people have suggested that she might be the Woods Witch that was brought to Summerhall.
I don't know. That would be a question for maybe Max. Do you know the deep lore of Alys? Is she a cool person? Is she related to the Hag of Summerhall?
On this Hag of Summerhall part, I don't know or I don't remember, but she is important to the story, and she plays an important role at Harrenhal. That's all I'll say on that.
Oh, I can see you trying so hard not to give spoilers away. I think I know what you're trying to avoid.
I don't know whether or not it was deliberate casting, but did either of you guys get the vibe that she kind of looked like a brunette Helena? Did you guys get that vibe?
Oh, she does, doesn't she?
Just me?
I was getting more of her vibe. She looked a bit more like Larys Strong.
Well, she is a Strongs, so.
Well.
Like a Rivers.
Like genetically a Strong. See, that's a. I mean, you never know with these witches, right? Like. she could be Melisandre for all we know. Like, I'm still, like, the thing is, it would be too fan servicey if they did actually bring in Melisandre, right? Like, it would be a little bit too. They've already given us the eggs, they've already given us the dagger, they've already given us The Wall. You know, they've got their throwbacks to Game of Thrones. I think actually bringing in a Game of Thrones character might be beyond the pale, or it also might,
I think it would
like,
undermine some of the current story.
like it'd be a distraction. It maybe probably wouldn't be a point. Yeah, like it wouldn't be a point. It's not like she's mentioned there or anything like that. And also, if Game of Thrones is anything to go by, they would at best leave clues, make it deliberately ambiguous, because that's kind of it. Although one thing I was thinking about, right, is that people keep talking about how, like, there used to be more magic in the world. They talk about it in Game of Thrones, how there used to be more magic in the world, and dragons are these creatures of magic. And I'm sure, by at this point in season two of Game of Thrones, we've seen more magic than we have here, right? Whether or not, like, you know, dragons,
I
are they
mean, it
actually?
depends on whether or not you view dragons as magical, I suppose.
I mean, not necessarily. I don't think. See, I'm sort of leaning back into doubling down on my High Valyrian is actually, like, as a language used to control dragons and to keep the aristocracy in power. It might not necessarily be in
Well,
that case in all. In old Valyria or even Essos, but like,
There a counterpoint to your theory there is in episode 4, Aegon can't speak High Valyrian, and he's talking to Sunfire in the common tongue.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether or not that was just him being stunted and nervous. Whether or not it really like he has like very low level Valyrian, I think he does have very low level Valyrian, which is
I'd
like in
like.
terms of who would have taught Alicent's children High Valyrian, because we know that Viserys was didn't give a toss about those kids. He wouldn't have taught them anything.
Aemon managed to
Didn't
learn
care.
somehow.
Well, Aegon. Said Aemond said that he spent like he had a throwaway line in season one about like he read all the like I should be the true king because I read a load of books about things I've studied old Valyria. So he's got a hard on for old Valyria like Viserys did. So he's like he's self-taught as far as I can tell. Like they would have some level of old Valyrian because they're both dragon riders. So the dragon pit. Folks would have given them like the equivalent of like sit, eat,
Well,
fly, Dracarys. But I genuinely think like and it'll be in like the ultimate question is does Helena speak Old Valyrian? Because if she doesn't speak Old Valyrian, then that means that it's definitely just Aemond's self-study.
I think that this point actually works in my favor, right? Because when Aegon was like, as it has been very thoroughly established, Aegon, his High Valyrian is very bad, right? In the dressing down that he got given at the small council in episode 5, and of course indicated by the fact that he was yelling English words at Sunfire. So obviously he's certainly not confident in a times of crisis to use High Valyrian, which could indicate. But he was also quite drunk, I'd imagine, when because he was drinking up when he was like getting on, and so he was not equipped to fight a war. You can't drink and dragon. That's just stupid, right?
It needs to be a t-shirt
And you
with
and
like
he
his like charred corpse underneath Sunfire. It's like the picture.
yeah,
Don't
don't
drink a
drink and
dragon.
yeah, because it's like, so there are a million and one reasons why he was going to get his ass handed to him. One of which might be he didn't have great control over his dragon because his High Valyrian was rubbish. So Sunfire was like, "Hang on a minute, is that English? Don't talk to me in English. Like, use the proper word, you know." But then again, as Aegon bonds with his dragon, he probably was speaking to Sunfire in English. It is Sunfire that's Aegon's dragon, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It
And
was nice to see Sunfire. We've not seen Sunfire like properly up close, and Sunfire's pretty. He's now smooched, but he's pretty.
Yeah. So the fact that he was kind of pretty feeble because, yeah, like you look at Aemond, and he was giving Rhaenyra like, well, he kind of won the dragon fight, right? Which is the absolute underdog. Because Rhaenyra's like got years of experience, communicates with a dragon really well. I suppose Aemond has the bigger dragon, right? And I
Yeah,
guess,
I
does that
mean, he's
mean?
got a couple of years on her because he'd had his name's day when he was having his name's day when Rhaenyra went and slayed the boar, and then they came back after her doing some flirty flirt, and then it wasn't till her wedding to Laenor that Daemon went off with Laena. So he has at least 3 or 4 years on her in terms of dragon training. He's also had, like, if you think about, like, he would have had the dragon pit trainers from a very, very young age, and at least to begin with, for the first like 3, 4, 5 years of his life. What was the point where the family where the eye incident happened and Rhaenyra decided to go to Dragonstone? So it was like maybe he was in his early tweens by then. He was like 13, 12, 13. We had 13 years of like proper family training with the Dragon Pit with Rhaenyra's kids at the same time, and Rhaenyra would have been making sure that her kids were like properly Dragon Pit trained and teaching them Valyrian. And so by default, he would have got some of that training, even though there was strife. And then during that time, Daemond was off in Essos with Laena. And from what we can tell, he was off studying in his book corner in his man cave. Laena was the one teaching. So she obviously probably would have been the primary teacher, but she's a Valyrian, not a. So
It's
she would have not necessarily had the lore knowledge that would have been kept at the keep.
Yeah, but I'd imagine there's probably like a fair number of like would maesters have known High Valyrian,
Well,
or
that
is
I have actually written that down. Who do you think in the council understood that conversation? Like, do you think
well,
Oswin
or
Orwell
while
understood
would.
that whole like Valerian put down?
He
He
probably
should have learned
he
because I imagine he's got a Valerian steel link.
well oh, see the thing is, of course, they were talking about his links in like episode 4 or 3 or something. Link of War. Have you
Yeah.
got a link of war there? Blah blah blah. So probably like there's probably a clue in there. I suspect, okay, theory, ad hoc theory, Orwell did understand what was being said, and he's like, Valerian, me? No. This is
No,
medical. This is my medical
right.
link. This no,
You
not
don't want to pay
Valerian.
attention. Because that was meant to be like
full
the
attention to
final
yourself.
exam, is them trying to do magic. And this is a time of magic, as we were just discussing, a time of dragons, a time of magic. So I'm assuming all maesters at least have had, like, tried to light a black candle.
Sorry, Max, what was that you gonna say?
I was going to say, yeah, I reckon that he does know it, but he doesn't want to draw attention to himself that he understands what's being said.
Because he's he, like we have no we don't know much about Orwell, but we do like he has, and I think that absence of knowing him or knowing anything about him is probably deliberate. He's because also like now the unreliable narrator thing is a bit difficult here. Fire and Blood, it makes it quite clear, but I don't know if House of the Dragon is like. Is this what really happened? Is this being told through the lens of the Maesters? Because you've got a Maester on either side, but also, like,
I mean, if we're
both.
talking about perspective, these last two episodes are really interesting because we've had like quick dreams. Like we've had quick edit dreams and quick edit visions. We've never had prolonged waking hallucinations ever depicted in the show. That's interesting because that is a character perspective thing. Like that's like if Daemond is the only one seeing it, then that is like it's changing some of the like storytelling language of the whole of Game of Thrones up until this point. Having a visual representation of waking hallucinations, we've never had that before, and that's like when they change the like medium language, like the media language, that is really interesting to me.
The point of view of the narrator change it almost, I don't know. That's the thing. Is this one of those deliberately ambiguous things where the is it just I don't know. Is it deliberately
Well,
ambiguous to
is it
see?
magical or I've got a theory which is kind of on par with your Valyrian as hierarchy theory. Is it magic? Is it grayscale, which we theorized he might have caught way back when? Is he getting dementia from grayscale? Or is it like just black mold? Is it the black mold of Harrenhal that's gotten in his brain? Because they were talking about the curse of Harrenhal and that sort of thing. So it could be poisoned food. Like he mentioned that the food, like he didn't trust the food. We've got Alice being there, being a bit witchy poo. It could be haunted or ghostly or whatever. It's nice to get an insight into Daemon that he's, pretty beat up about things. But like, just mold? Is it just moldy bed because of damp environment?
Fungus,
It's
just
a
a general.
weirwood bed.
It is a weirwood bed.
But
And
is it just a moldy bed?
well, so the weirwood bed, now I think if Alt Shift X is to be believed,
Oh,
I think
I've
they
not
said
watched this episode yet.
this they is that so when the first men came, they cut down a lot of the weirwood trees, and the weirwood trees were used to make certain bits and pieces, furniture and things like that. One of which I believe was the bed that Daemon was sleeping in. And in Game of Thrones, I forget, I don't know which book, but it was like Jaime Lannister falls asleep with his head on a weirwood stump. And he has a prolific dream there. Now, it could be
I
the
was going to
case
say,
if we're.
does it produce green dreams?
It could. Or hallucination. Or I don't know. Or can it. Or just wacky dreams, or could Alice Rivers be, putting some mushrooms in his tea or something? I suppose, the deliberate ambiguousness of Game of Thrones or of Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, etc. Like it's in full play here, because it could be the case that when we talk about magic, it might be that some magics have something to them and some magics don't. So, for example, the magic of the old gods could actually be legit, but the magic from like the Seven or the magic from dragons might actually be more smoke and mirrors and illusionary stuff. And it because we do sort of have this feeling that the two worlds or the North stuff is separate. The then you've got the Seven. And then you've got like your various Eastern religions, so for example, like or the mythos in general, rather like the mythos around dragons, the mythos around High Valyria, and that probably ties in maybe to the Red Priests, although whether or not the Red Priests are harnessing the magic of the North just in a different part of the world, I don't know, probably not really. So it might just be the case that some of these particular sects are. Or factions, or religions, or whatever they are, some are more legit than others. It might just be a case of that, and it might not necessarily be clear which is legit and which isn't. Because I think it's a lot harder to argue that the magic of the North is bullshit. But I think with dragons and the Seven, I think there's a lot more scope for question. But
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
nice to.
again, like fruit, like with all like the religions of Game of Thrones, only a few have proven to be actually magical, and a lot of the ones that even though, like there's a moment in the first book that Catelyn falls asleep in the temple and has what feels like a prophetic dream, Like, is it a gift from the seven? Was she just going to sleep while hungry? It's hard. It's really hard to know because obviously in the chapters in the book are all character POV. So how much of that, the relevance of that was translated via Catelyn's perspective? It's
So
cool. I like.
I'm quite surprised and intrigued. I like it's nice to see like a more like it's nice to see Harrenhal in a bit more of all its glory, and I'm hoping that we see more of that also with the Hedge Knight, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, 6-episode miniseries that they're doing. Like, it's going to be nice to see more of just, I would say more of Westeros, but is it mostly the Riverlands and sort of the, you know, a sort of Riverlands adjacent bits? But I don't know, it's still nice to see something that's not King's Landing for a change. Like, I did feel that season one did sit on its, you know, I mean, there were, you know, moments where it was away from King's Landing, but 90% of the show is in King's Landing now. It's like it's nice to it's nice it feels a bit more like old Game of Thrones when you've got over here they're doing this on Dragonstone, over here this is going on in Harrenhal, over here this is going on in King's Landing, and then there'll probably be something going on in the Eyrie, and also with Rook's Rest. So anyway, do we want to talk about a different character for a
Let me think just. I've written down Dragon Dreams or Greyscale like twice. Whether or not it's Dragon Dreams or Green Dreams or Greyscale, some sort of dementia. Like, it'd be interesting as well whether or not Viserys's turn to like dementia and illness was purely just physiological, or whether or not there is an aspect that maybe he had some level of innate dementia as well as his ongoing illness, because maybe that's part of what's affecting Daemon. I don't know. I was theorizing. And
I was thinking it could be like milk of the poppy, you know, the because he was on a lot of
yeah.
milk of the poppy towards the end, which I think actually Alicent gave him some milk of the poppy before that conversation, or am I misremembering that?
I can't
I
remember.
don't know.
And we've talked a little bit about Alice, and I enjoyed the idea that they've got between Alice's description as a bastard and how very clearly strong her features are. Her features are very genetically looking like the Strongs. They had an interesting shot with Alan and what's he called? Cool
Oh,
pirate dude.
Alan and Rainey's,
And they had a shot of
Alan and his brother Adam.
no, his father,
Oh,
Corlys. It was
Corlys.
Corlys and Alan in the same shot, and the casting, because I've only seen them opposite each other in frame, and they put them like face to face. And the casting is so good. Like, when you actually look at them next to each other in frame, like there was the line from last season about the blood runs strong in old Valyria, between the old the Valyrians. The blood runs strong in Valyrians, and the blood runs strong in the original Game of Thrones. And it's very clear, and I enjoyed that when we talk about bastards. The fact that there's two bastards that clearly have that genetic trend, it's fun to see.
I'm going to look up. I'm going to see House of the Dragon. There was another character guide, wasn't there? Cast and characters. Is this the one? Yeah. So okay, cool. All right. So I think this is a this I'm hoping this one's updated for season two. So we're looking at we've got Vaemond, Lannister, Jace, Aegon Targaryen, Baelor, Rhaena, Helena. We don't have the bastards.
It should be
Season
a
oh.
subsetting for all the bastards.
It's not it's not it's only given us season one. Oh my God, House of the Dragon website people. How official guide. Is there not a season two? Do I have to get the Dracarys app? Okay, yeah, that's disappointing. I'll have to find a better, like a more up-to-date family tree. Because like yeah, I want like we need to gauge the bastards. I gotta be honest, Adam is a is like why doesn't like he is insistent on not having him a personality. Like what like he's just like how stoic can I be?
He is
His
very stoic.
yeah, like
Yeah.
his brother Adam, I like him. He's kind of like he's living life, you
He's
know?
got some
But I just
personality, yeah.
yeah, I now there might be a reason for it, right? Like Adam might have just
But
seen
there's
some shit,
stuff for
right?
later.
Yeah, I you know,
Yeah,
like I mean,
hopefully,
don't get me
hopefully
wrong.
there'll be something.
I like the bits in Driftmark. Like I like the characters. For some reason, I like the style of dress over there. Like it just seems a little bit more colorful, a little bit more stylish,
Very
and
blue.
very a lot of blue, and I really like that. And it does remind me that like a lot the Northerners just do not like color. And actually, I think some of the costumes here, like the costumes in Game of Thrones, were amazing. But I think they're even better here. There's like I think that they're, I don't know if that's necessarily you know assisting the plot or assist or whether or not it's just like, you know, just general improvements in design over time. But yeah, like so, I think now I might be wrong and the show might go in a different direction. So this, I think this might be a minor spoiler if I'm correct, but I think it's not Adam, but Alan who becomes a dragon rider. Now, I don't know if Max is going to point out whether or not that's full of shit,
You can spoil me, it's fine.
is it?
I don't mind. You go
Adam
for it.
is the
You go
one
for
that's
it.
a dragon rider. Alan does not become a dragon
Oh,
rider.
okay, so Alan is the stoic one, and Adam is he's the more chill one, right?
Yes, Adam is the one with the longer hair, I believe.
Well, the one with hair.
So
Yeah,
I don't mind being
the
spoiled for this.
one with hair.
Does Sea Smoke end up with one of those bastards?
Yes.
Okay,
Oh.
cool. Because I made note that Sea Smoke was restless, and we were
Yes.
discussing with the last episode that we had that shot of him like digging for crabs on the beach and seeing the dragon, and we couldn't work out which dragon it was. But it makes sense if it is Sea Smoke after that line between Rhaenyra and whoever she was talking to about the dragon being rest. Oh, with Missarya, talking about the dragon being restless and maybe he's lonely. So it'll be interesting as well to see whether or not we get the answer, the hanging question as to whether or not Laenor is dead, if that is part of it as well. Or maybe Sea Smoke just wants to go to war.
Well, like it seems like I don't know, like Sea Smoke is probably like confused. Because
Sad.
I don't know if a dragon knows when they're yeah, this is going back to the
This is
magical
the
ambiguity.
question. It'll be good to get an answer on it in the Amorphous future, one way or the other, whether or not it is a magical psychological connection or animal neglect.
I think Laenor, I don't know, it'd be great if they had a cutaway at some point in one of the episodes where Laenor was just like walking down the steps, tripped, fell, died, and okay, unbox the
Just
dragon.
dies in the most mundane way possible. It's not like he's stabbed in the back alley or something, or like, decides I'm gonna come back and fight for Rhaenyra. No,
Yeah, but
he
like we've
drowns in
all
the
like I mean
He
I don't
slips in the
think
shower.
yeah like I mean every like British kid has been to on a school trip to a castle, right? We've all seen the spirally stone stairs where
Yeah, and
like
the
you know
warnings about mind your head, go slow, hold onto the rails.
yeah and if it's raining and the water gets onto the staircase, it's a death trap. I am surprised more people don't just die falling down the stairs. Some of the have you ever like this the cathedral in Cologne, which is a beautiful cathedral, but one of the cool things about it is you can go to the top of the tall tower that's really tall. You have to walk like 10 or 15 minutes up spiral stairs, and it's like if you fall, you're like falling for like a
You're like
whole like
comedy falling, like
yeah yeah and it, and it's
if
proper.
you like it goes on long enough that it's not funny and then it gets funnier again. Like,
You die before you get to the
okay.
bottom of the stairs. Like it's just, it's
Just
yeah.
get wedged if they're that narrow. I haven't seen them.
Maybe you can grab onto the central pillar. They're not wide, so you could probably, but like, I mean, it does look like it does feel like a death trap. I'm surprised. I remember being there at the time. I'm like, I'm surprised they just let tourists straight up here. Like, and also they've got the suicide nets at the top, so you can't jump off the top. But like, one slip and you're done for. Like, it's just like,
That's a
oh, but.
horrible way to go, though. Of all the ways to go, deliberately throwing yourself down the central spiral staircase, probably into some angry tourists midway down, is probably one of the worst ways to go.
Yeah,
I
how
can
many
definitely.
people are you going to take out on your way down?
Oh my God, you could take out, like, if you're like a 200-pound person, then actually you might get stuck. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, 200 pounds isn't massive. Yeah, 200, yeah, 200 pounds. I don't know, because you kind of it'll bottleneck you. So like, all you got, once you've hit like two or three people, you're probably like wedged in, and then you're all right. Yeah, if you
Like a human snowball getting stuck on the spiral
oh
staircase.
man,
Oh, I'm
but
tired.
I can recommend the cathedral in Cologne if anyone happens to be visiting Germany. It's quite beautiful. It's better than most of our cathedrals, all things. I mean, I don't get me wrong, I'm not dissing our cathedral, but like, the one in Cologne's kind of a, next level. So anyway, I completely lost where we were now.
I think we were transitioning through subjects, but I'll just throw in like I mentioned we've already talked about Harrenhal a lot, but if we're talking about slippery stairs, like Daemon going through the haunted castle in the rain, like I really hope Matt Smith, had sensible boots on or something, because he could very easily slipped on those stairs. And that's like the second spooky castle at night sequence. In the heavy rain that we've had this season, so there's a bit of a theme between like him sneaking through the castle with Helena escaping through the castle, which I found nice parallels.
So,
Let me see. Any? I've just put Caraxes. I love this weird bean in my notes because the sound design for Caraxes
oh
is just the
yeah.
best, and the sound design for what she called Grandma Dragon is just so good.
That's right, we've got the
Melees.
dragon melees,
Or
is it?
are you
Yeah.
talking about Vhagar?
Vhagar. Between Vhagar and Caraxes, those the way they do the audio for both those dragons is just
Wouldn't it
it's
be
like an
great to hear
audio
them
snack.
together?
Yeah. Oh gosh, if Caraxes versus Vhagar would be an interesting battle, because one of them's a little sneaky snake and the other one's like a giant turtle.
Is Caraxes, is he the one with the gabby leg?
Yeah, he's got
He's
weird,
the one
like,
that
little
looks.
fin feet and, like, a long, snaky neck.
Looks like a noodle.
He, yeah, like he's
He's a
got,
noodle.
like. Yeah, like he's got. So, okay, so we've got Arax, Beleriand, Siraxes. Now, is Sirax, yeah,
Caraxes
formidable.
is Rhaenyra's.
I think he's called like the Bloodworm or something.
Yeah, he's,
Which
yeah.
one's
Caraxes
Dame?
Bloodworm.
Oh,
That's Daemon's,
That's
right?
Daemon's.
Daemon's.
Daemon's is
Yeah,
Caraxes.
Caraxes. Yeah. Caraxes has
He makes
the
like happy
little
little
leg.
screechy noises. He does like little sort of like bird call screeches, and it's just, oh, love him. He's such a weird little bean. Right, do you guys want to, if we're talking about one edge lord, do you guys want to talk about
The other Ledge Lord.
Aemond?
Oh yeah.
Because
I come off on that edge.
actor went full dong.
I like yes. Bravo. Bravo. It's I don't know, like, I always feel like, because I mean, the original Game of Thrones, it was very like
He's very
unfortunate,
female.
and it was, and also
Yeah.
like, you hear about how Emilia Clarke was like kind of pressured into the topless scenes. Like, you didn't need the topless scenes. They weren't that, they weren't worth, putting the pressure on or anything like that. So I'm hoping, and I'm imagining that like Aemond's character is was cool with it. But anyway, yeah, props to him, because
It was apparently the actor's choice, from what I heard, is that
oh, that's good. Yeah. What
I
about
mean,
Alfie
to be
Allen?
honest, if I worked out that much, I would probably make that choice as well.
Yeah.
Like,
He's got a body for it as well. So yeah.
jeez. When you
Yeah.
got it, like, get it on film, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a good moment. I mean, it was the full dong erection that kind of like, because yeah, that's like, I'm imagining when that hits like broadcast television, they're gonna have to crop. I suppose they crop it out or something, right? Like it's not hard to like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
On HBO, they
I
show it
mean,
on HBO. I don't know
they
yeah,
show it on what.
HBO is able to do full
Yeah,
usually.
because I mean it's just a streaming service, right? Like it's no different to Pornhub.
Yeah, but it's also like a premium cable channel.
Yeah, that's one
It's
thing.
the premium cable channel that's allowed to do that sort of thing. Because I can remember, like, True Blood had some full, like, it was relatively rare. They like held back a lot more boobies than Dom. Like, True Blood used to do it. Obviously, Game of Thrones used to do it. I think of any other series off the top of my head that I watched that was HBO, but HBO was the place where if you wanted to watch prestige dramas that also had nudity, that was the one place that they could do it, which is part of the reason why I think Game of Thrones went there in the first place, is I can't think of any other network that has got enough of a budget behind it that would have been willing to go to the places that Game of Thrones did, even the places they maybe shouldn't have gone. But I can't think of any other series, like, if they put it on, like, can you imagine if they put it on like NBC? Like, it would be so PG-13.
Yeah. I think I liked, like, it was, I don't know, yeah, like it wasn't, it was happy dong as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, every it, like
We
it's
just
not
like very nearly quoted my dad there.
like,
We went to a Roman ruin when we were like old enough to know enough, but not old enough for them to have like the common. Like, I think I was like 11, and we walked around the outside of the Roman ruin, which was just like trenches and dugout bits. And then we went into like the inside museum, which had like all of the stuff that they'd picked up. And we looked at the map, and it was, a barracks, so it had, the washrooms and the sleeping rooms and the brothel. And so we'd looked at the map, and we'd wandered around all of these areas. We went into the indoor museum part, and I can remember pointing up at the top shelf and being like, "Dad, what's that?" Knowing full well what it was, and my dad responded with, "That's a happy penis." And that will forever live rent-free in my brain because, Roman brothels were about the male pleasure, not about the ladies that you might witness.
I mean, were they not, were Roman brothels a more of a queer establishments, or
They could be. I mean, there's
were
kind
they a
of
bit
an
more?
establishment within the slave trade that if you were a slave, you would also by default be a sexual product for your master, regardless of gender. But yeah, so but basically, it was the outside. It was the billboard for the brothel. It wasn't like boobies. It was happy penis.
Happy penis,
And
yeah.
credit where credit's due. They went full dong.
Yeah,
Anyway.
yeah. So yeah, like I mean, it's yeah, and yeah, fair play to him. And it was a meet, like it meant, like it was a meaningful scene as well. Like it moved the plot forward. That's the thing about the nudity in House of the Dragon. Like it
It
puts it
means
into,
something.
yeah, like it puts into contrast, because like take for example the scene where I think it was in season, it was in the, I think it was the last season, where Bronn was like, he was in the brothel. There were like three prostitutes, and then Qyburn came in and made his like offer. It's like that scene didn't really need to be set in a brothel. You just kind of did that for, you know, which is fine. I'm
Yeah,
not like
well,
necessarily against
like,
it, but like.
Game of Thrones set the standard for sex position. Like, I think it was like episode one or two where it had Littlefinger being like, "I'm going to exposit while two prostitutes get each other off in the background." And like, they set the standard for that. And at least at that point, it was somewhat like, how else are you going to get Littlefinger as a. You can't get a POV character. You need to have him explaining something to the audience, otherwise you have no idea about his personality. And let's do it in a way that will titillate the audience. I get the argument for it, but
Sorry,
by
did you
the
say
time it reached the last
Horlians?
couple of I did not. I did say titillate. But I feel like it's one of those things that by the time they got to the last couple of seasons of Game of Thrones, like with many aspects of the original wonder, it was self-parody.
Yeah, they even did, like, even with the bit with, like, oh, Ed Sheeran ended up dying, okay, fine. Like, I would tolerate that kind of thing in Star Wars, but I, anyway, House of the Dragon sort of is a bit more grown up than that, isn't it?
Yeah, and it definitely has a more equally gendered perspective, both in terms of nudity and in terms of so many other aspects, which again, I love.
Yeah, and it's nice that I think there is a distinction between a brothel run by Littlefinger and a brothel run by that madam. Is that the right term? I'm not familiar with the terminology.
Madam, I think.
Madam, the
Yeah.
head sex worker, and I think it to me it gets it's like Littlefinger exploitative in various different ways. Whereas this mistress,
There
madam,
is a level of self-management.
it's a, yeah, it feels less exploitative, more sort of like capitalistic and entrepreneurial, right? And a
Yeah,
little bit.
well, if you look at prostitution in the Old West, there was a whole subculture of prostitutes, particularly when they were setting up townships. The prostitutes would actually be responsible for paying for a lot of the construction of the town. They would contribute to like children's education. Like they because they took in so much income, they put it back into the communities. So a lot of the whorehouses in the Old West were actually contributing back to society in a way that was fundamentally better for the people. And I do enjoy that this kind of is playing into that a little bit. It's kind of, that this is it's a community type thing, which obviously it's a community establishment that caters to royals, and royals are coming in and kind of, throwing their weight around and being little shits. But I did enjoy everything about, not everything about that scene because it was still pretty nasty in places, but I enjoyed the fact that it was progressing the story and telling a lot of really interesting character beats.
Yeah, it made it yeah, like it was particularly good in that side. I'm really warming up to Aemond as a character. When he was first, particularly in season one, I felt he was a bit, I don't know, felt gimmicky and a bit cartoonish, particularly with the eye patch, particularly with the jewel in the eye. However, in this season, I think they've fleshed him out a little bit more. I think
I'm
that,
enjoying the fact that he's still a bullied kid. He's still being bullied and he's still being teased and he's still being belittled by his brother.
by everyone, it really.
Even by everyone, yeah. And like it's still that it's petty and it's vulgar. And like obviously no wonder towards the end of the episode two of this particular set, he was like, Vega, let's let Granny sleep for a little bit longer. I'm not gonna jump to rescue my brother right now. He can be an absolute moron for a bit longer. I'm not gonna engage.
Absolutely,
And
yeah.
part of that is petty revenge.
So I see. I mean, that's like, that's, I mean, that's like, I don't, so I don't, is it, I don't know if you'd necessarily, I don't, I've used the word ambiguous far too much so far in this episode, but like, if someone's been an asshole to you and is regularly an asshole to you,
Is it
and
petty?
it, well, the thing is, and so in when it came to the battle in Rook's Rest, so you had Rhaenyra, you had Aegon, and you had Daemon all in dragons, and it certainly seemed apparent
Brave.
Rhaenys and Aemond, God, I got two out of three names wrong there, right? Aegon, Rhaenys, Aemond, and there was that bit where Aegon and Rhaenys were in a lock, and then Aemond came and basically went for both of them. So is that, so to me, that is that whilst it could be interpreted as revenge, it could also be interpreted as, if he dies, I don't care because my life will end up being better anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like he just, he's, it's just like he doesn't, like if he loved his brother, then he would be more careful. But he probably doesn't, and he probably doesn't love his brother because, like, in some ways, Aegon bullies Aemond because, like, Aemond is like the nerd, and Aegon is like the jock in this particular like world, right? Because, like, you know, you look at Aemond, he studies, he's always doing the swords, he's probably really well bonded with his dragon, he reads High Valyrian, like he is like the high achiever. And you know, high achievers often end up getting bullied, and but then he sort of counter bullies by the fact that like he just goes after Rhaenys, you know, Rhaenys, and just considers his brother maybe collateral damage, maybe he particularly wanted to because he's technically in line for the throne, right?
He's the heir. Now that Jaehaerys, now that Aegon's son is dead, he would be in May War doesn't exist, apparently. Aemond is next in line for the throne.
Yeah, so he would
If
be
you
the
believe
second heir,
Aegon,
yeah.
if you believe
Unless they can
Aegon's
produce
friend.
another heir. I did find it interesting as well. There was the shot of during the first council scene in the first of this set of episodes with Aegon playing with the coin he found during the attack on Helena in the council meeting. He's like flipping the coin between his fingers. And so I don't know whether or not
Yes.
part of his more vindictive behavior is in some way a rebuttal against the mistreatment of Helena. I don't know whether or not his urge to get into combat and do battle, and to conspire with Kristen to do the whole sneaky dragon attack, whether or not that was in some way vengeance for Helena and her trauma, because it's one of those things that was implied quite a lot in season one, that there was a connection between Aemond and Helena, and he would have been happy to marry her. And so I don't know whether or not there's just it was a very it was a like I would say it's a throwaway shot in any other series. I'd be like, it's a throwaway shot, it means nothing. But in this series, like a throwaway shot of him playing with the coin that he found during his investigation of the assassination of Jaehaerys, is something that feels a tangible connection between his intentions with Kristen and the vaguer plot line with the attack on. Like, obviously, the whole attack on Rooks was to draw out some of Rhaenyra's dragons. That was the plan. I wasn't expecting Vhagar. I was expecting some like snuck in scorpion bolts. That's what I was expecting. I was expecting they snuck some scorpion bolts into the wood, and were gonna try and take down a dragon, because that's why they would attack Raven's Roost, was because they wanted to draw out Rhaenyra's dragons. Now, obviously, if you're gonna draw out a dragon, you might as well bring the biggest nuke. And
And
that totally
also,
makes sense.
it kind, yeah, I mean, I was working this out. Like, if they were going to send a dragon, who would they have sent? I don't think they could have sent anyone else. I feel like this was set up a little
Well,
bit from the start.
he's got the biggest nuke. 100%. I
Yes.
was expecting scorpion bolts. I was not expecting Vhagar. In all fairness, though, in the same way I was talking about Ned, it was really predictable. The moment I saw that like leathery wing move in the trees, I was like, oh, I'm stupid. We haven't seen Aemond for like two scenes. Of course they bring the biggest nuke.
I liked how they did it. It was really, really cool because they chopped the trees down. So they were like cluing you in as it went, which I
Yeah, well,
thought was
I
cool.
enjoyed the fact with the tree felling reminded me of the fact that the Tudors in real history, like, absolutely wrecked the ecosystem of the UK. They demolished so many forests, and so I made a note of that, wondering what that was about. But it totally makes sense if they were just making room to hide this ginormous dragon.
That's
which I
kind of
thought
cool. And I liked the battle formations as well. I liked the
was
archers in Rook's Rest. I liked that there was strategy. I liked, yeah, like I thought, like I was assuming, and I think we were all supposed to be as audience, that that Cole was going to be marching on Harrenhal.
cool.
And then he said something like, "Ah, but now we go around." They would that because that would be what they least suspect, and
I
and
do
it
enjoy
makes
the fact that they put in, so it's called what's the word? There's a story, it's like an exposition tool that you put into stories. It's called like the questioner, where you put in a side character to be like, but why are you doing that? So the character can then explain it. And so I've enjoyed the fact that they finally brought in Alison's brother to be like, but what are you doing, Kristen? I don't know what you're doing. Tell me your plan. So they can go, I have a plan.
Yeah, Gawain, who,
Which I was
yeah.
enjoying. Gawain, who's very like old knighty. He feels very like he's from a different fantasy show.
Yeah, like he does it, he does, and it's actually the High Towers seem to have a bit of color on their armor, which is kind of nice. Yeah, he does almost feel like I think that's a little bit like he's quite pampered, right? Like he's grown up, he's probably well trained and all that kind of stuff, but like, he is kind of a bit of a posh boy who is probably like effectively LARPing as a knight, right?
I'm
So
also enjoying the fact
it's
that he's probably so it's one of my favorite literary tropes because it's one of the things from one of my favorite Dickens all time. Which is I'll Meet Your Friend, where there's two villains. And one of them is naturally intelligent, so they're not academic, but they are wise and devious. And the other one thinks that they're the smartest person in the room, because they're educated. And I feel like between Christian, he's kind of dumb as a post in some ways, but I think he has really good battle instincts. He
He's
has an
obviously,
instinct when it comes
calm
to
streets, right?
cruelty and war. But while I've got the feeling that Gawain is going to be very educated but not that bright, and I love that dichotomy when you put two characters next to each other, one who's kind of instinctually intelligent and one who's educatedly intelligent, just to see how
Yeah.
they play off each other.
What are you gonna say, Max?
I said Christian Cole would like to think that he's street smart.
Like he's got like like it's experience versus book smarts, right? So like yeah, Christian has basically made his entire reputation about his past in previous conflicts, and I think
Which none of
like.
which involve dragons, and
Yes.
which he soon learns that this is a completely different kind of war than he's used to.
Well, it's
I
okay if you're
really
going
like.
with the nuke thing, it's oh,
Yeah, I
like
like how they show his
realization.
perspective after the Battle of Rook's Rest.
What have I wrought? Like
Yeah.
the guy cooked in his own armor and just an ash in armor was just like it was like one of those classic fantasy trope moments that just it made my brain happy.
I imagine that when a dragon breathes fire, the fire it breathes is like infinitesimally hotter than like a log fire or something like that, right? Like it's
Actually, it's like a microwave.
yeah, or like a welding torch or something like that, like it's different, it's a whole different level, because I think it was one of the House of the Dragon channels that I watch mentioned that when one of the dragons got scratched with the grappling, oh, that was something. The grappling was just so much more visceral than them just breathing fire at each other. Because I don't even know if that would really affect the dragons that much, right? But when they were grappling, I think some of the blood fell down and then burned.
Yeah, I've written down boiling blood, question mark.
Yeah,
Like,
I
is it
noticed
like,
that
would that be
too.
like hot oil? Like,
Yeah.
does dragon blood boil?
It has
Because
to.
that's horrifying.
It could like dragon blood could like, if we're giving a bit of like poetic license to the science behind it, right? The if a dragon is going to be able to like crisp out a person in armor like in less than a second, they kind of have to be, I don't know, like 1,000 degrees centigrade. It has to be that hot. And if you're going to make fire that hot, then you basically have to have like your blood. How is your blood not going to be hundreds of degrees centigrade? It's going to be as hot as fat, deep fried cooking fat. It's got to be, right? It's yeah. So.
It was like that the whole dragon sequence was both cool and horrifying. Like there was so much build up and so much like again nuclear metaphor and all of that jazz, and then I think they really did it justice, like the horror of it, the fact that like you had the heroic speech from Kristen about like men of true knights, let's go fight and your king is here. And then he basically stood behind the tree line to be like, well, fuck, I'm not getting involved in that shit.
Yeah, it's like I don't know, I always kind of feel like, oh shit, what's he doing here? Like he's just shown up and
Yeah.
it's
Well,
like
everyone was like, oh, no. What? Well, like, and again, that was heavily foreshadowed because we talked about in last podcast him finding violence stimulating. And then we've constantly in the last two episodes see him being made impotent. With people saying, no, you can't go out to battle, no, you can't do this. You had Laris doing a perfect manipulation of, well, the small people are gossiping that you're weak because your counselors told you to go fight and then you agreed, and so you should not agree to really put it to your counselors. That was brilliant manipulation. It was just so perfect for a dumb. And he's such a dumb dude. And Laris just played him like a fiddle. Like it had like so much foreshadowing that he was gonna like fuck things up for everyone.
I'm really enjoying Laris as a character. I like the fact that he plays the role of a Varys or a Littlefinger without just being another Varys or Littlefinger. In the same way that
He's got
Aegon,
his own motivations.
Aegon is sort of like cruel and inward looking, but not like Joffrey. So it's like I like that they've got that they have analogues, because it makes sense that there are analogues of other characters because of this cycle of violence. But at the same time, on a sort of a storytelling kind of point of view, like Laris is, yeah, like he's just got he's distinct in his own way. And I'm going to be very intrigued to find out under future people who sit on the Iron Throne where he stands. Is he going to be a like a talented political mover and manage to stay as a Master of Whispers for a while, or is he going to get his head knocked off?
Well, I found it interesting that his uncle in Harrenhal was like, yeah, I 100% know that, like, there's no way that this arson was not my nephew. There is, like, it had to, like, I'm not stupid. Like, there is no way that my brother and my nephew died in an arson, like, in a fire, an accidental fire in Harrenhal. Not a chance. It was 100% my other nephew murderballing them. Like, don't stop, pass, go. I know this to be facts. And it was just like very telling in a way that Laris thinks he's the sneakiest dude in the world, and his uncle was just like, yeah, it was him. Like, I don't need a lineup. It was him.
He did the same thing to his Aunt Gwendolyn last summer. It's like, don't trust the guy.
Like he gets a bit angry, he burns down the house.
He's only got one trick, and that's murder. Once he was like, what? That's
Murder
all he's
with
got.
fire.
Murder, yeah, murder and a bit of prodding. That's really all he's got, really. He can perform a murder, and he doesn't even do his own murders. Like he outsources it. Like he's completely, yeah. Outsource.
Yeah.
He, in
I
fact,
did
to be fair,
find it.
he did outsource one
Carry
particular
on.
murder to the king,
Yeah, in all fairness, which reminded me actually of I don't know if I mentioned it last podcast, but that sequence reminded me of Littlefinger bringing Joffrey the prostitute so he could brutalize her for his entertainment. But I think the difference between Joffrey and Aegon hurts things because he really, really cares. He has like too much emotions, and he doesn't have any control over them, and no like systems to control them. While when it comes to Joffrey, it was kind of like it was proper, like sort of sadic enjoyment. Like his thing was he can't feel anything except a little bit of joy when he hurts things.
Yeah, and all
So
that.
there are like they're comparable but like different sides of the coin, which
Yeah.
I love all of these sort of parallels.
Like, I
They
mean,
make me happy.
well, if we're gonna parallel again, like, I think Alicent Hightower is something of an analog for Cersei Lannister. Because I think like the reason Aegon is largely down to Alicent kind of not really giving him or Dame Aemond, the parental support that they need, and that's why Aemond seeks basically a motherly contact in on the Street of Silk, and I
Yeah, I
think.
mean, like you can empathize with her because it was basically marital rape that she was kind of
Well,
pushed
trafficking. She
into.
was trafficked, yeah, like.
And then the children that she bore were, essentially Targaryens from the get-go. Like they look Targaryen, they're dragon riders, but then their father didn't love them either. So how could you put love into these children that were basically bred to be dragon riders, when
And
their father didn't care about them either.
yeah, well, and Otto Hightower, of course, basically these children are political pawns. Like they're very,
Oh,
like,
100%.
and of course that's going to mess them up. And again, it's, it sort of perpetrates the cycle of violence. Like, I mean, if with the mind of them becoming dragon riders, you're literally, bringing children into this world for the purposes of violence. That's, it is kind of like pertinent to the values of the show, I guess, right?
I mean, if we're also talking about Alicent, the moon tea scene, I enjoyed the fact that there's enough of a precedent with how many times theoretically Alicent has covered up for Aegon's misbehaviour that she can ask for moon tea on behalf of someone in the household that needs to have moon tea that Orwell doesn't question her on it. But equally, like, she could have put the jar underneath the table. Like it's obviously a moon tea pot. Don't leave it out on the desk and then say, yes, you can come in. Like, I get that you're feeling a bit shitty. Like, you've just had an abortion, basically. But, like, put the jar under the bed or something.
Or just drink it and then give it back to Orwell, because Orwell will like probably be relatively discreet. Like, the thing is, right, I'm assuming that in this universe the moon tea comes in a special pot because you don't want to put it in with the general washing up, right? Because it's got po like it's, it needs to be like medical grade. You don't want to get your moon tea
Where are the
mixed up with
cosheets
you.
for moon tea?
You don't want to get your moon tea mixed up with your olive oil or anything like that. So yeah, like it kind of makes sense that they would have a distinct, or like a medical vial, I suppose, wouldn't it? It'd be like, oh, you've got a medical vial or something. Well, that's Orwell's pot as well. And of course, I suppose,
Yeah.
although this, I don't think they thought this far into it, but like in those like medieval times, every single object was like orders of magnitude more valuable than like objects today, right? Like, for example, I got my cup here. If I drop this and it broke, I got loads of them, and it's not that expensive to replace. But like in the world of Game of Thrones, oh, I just put it down here and it is mine. with like medieval world and Game of Thrones, it's like one of the big like inaccuracies with medieval action films is them cutting rope, like cutting rope like it's willy-nilly, because like rope is like really expensive in medieval times. You untie it and use it again, right? So I don't know, I guess like people probably have a maybe not necessarily the aristocracy, but they probably have a greater idea of how many cups are in their cupboard, because that kind of shit's more expensive proportional to your earnings, I guess. And also, like, you know, they didn't really have mass production in the same way that we do, right? Weird side tangent, yeah. And doesn't really add anything to the discussion, so I'm sorry about that.
No worries. Like, it's true, though. Like, you know, I suspect her plan was, you know, like a week later to return the jar to Orwell and say, yes, the girl who I was taking this for, who was presumably, she was going to claim it was the same as the last one, which was be a maid of Aegon's that he raped. She's now drunk the tea, she's fine, here's your jar back. But, like, just leaving it open in her chambers, like, just, again, just, like, put it under the desk. Like, it doesn't need to be well hidden, it just needs to be out of sight. Like, it's the same as when your parents come to visit and you haven't finished doing the laundry, so you just shove it into your bedroom, like, you know?
You don't have open bottles of vodka just on the coffee table. It's
no. And then you have to answer questions.
I'm kind of interested in actually her relationship with Larys in terms of, is she starting to, like, fear him or,
she's kind of over it, I think, because he clearly just immediately knew exactly what was going on, and she was like, yeah, whatever, I'm just going to put some hot stones on my belly because I'm feeling shit.
I think the thing is, right, I think we know, like, we know that Larys knows what Alicent's like and all that kind of thing and the things she gets up to and all that. And he does make it explicit that he doesn't care. Like, it's like, you know, it's life's pleasures, isn't it? And I'm starting to think that the whole foot thing was maybe a one off or like not an ongoing thing, because I think from Larys Strong's point of view, it was more about power and...
Oh, yeah, 100%
like,
about
almost like humiliation. Yeah.
It was a power humiliation thing, but I think, interestingly, since she started sleeping with Cole, kind of regained her, like, she's regained a sense of, like, she's reclaimed her sexuality. Mm. So now, like, what can Larys take away from her? What can he do? She's not going to let him do that again. She's not...
Well...
Like,
she doesn't, I think, I don't know if she does, but if I was in a position, I would still be scared of I think she is scared of Larys, because she does kind of try and be discreet and cover up this thing about Cole, even though he doesn't mind.
It's so blatant. I don't think she's even trying to cover it up, because she's just like, well, he's seen the moon tea. Like, I think if he hadn't seen the moon tea,
he probably wouldn't have said anything.
And it would be fine, but I feel like they were almost having, like, a direct conversation. Like, they were having a conversation entirely made up of subtext, and they both were aware of that. Like, they were both saying things like, okay, yeah, I took moon tea, and yes, I'm sleeping with... And he was like, yeah, you're sleeping with Cole. And she's like, yeah, but, you know, I'm not going to confess to it. And he's like, okay, what can I do about that then?
I mean, but also, who else is she going to be sleep? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I did enjoy, though, and I'm pretty sure it's before the moon tea scene. She's been seeking absolution. She talked, like, last podcast we talked about how she was projecting onto Cole, saying that he wanted absolution and wasn't able to get it, and she tried to get absolution from her father and, like, confess her sins. And we know that she doesn't know her brother well enough to ask that of him. But then Helena gave her absolution.
Yeah.
Like, unprompted, Helena was just like, I forgive you. I think that happened before the moon tea. And I just found that, like, Helena's such a good egg.
I've got a theory. You've just inspired a batshit theory in my head.
Okay.
It might not be batshit. Okay, right. I'm gonna try not to, like, read Max's body language, because to give this away. Now, actually,
let's watch Max.
I don't think this would have been covered in the books. This might be a deviation from the show, and I like that they're doing enough deviations in the show that it does keep the book readers a little bit on their toes.
Yeah,
But I
definitely.
think this one might be the case that I think Alicent hates Aegon, and I think that I don't. We don't know whether or not he's dead, do we?
We don't
Yeah,
know.
I think she definitely doesn't care
Right.
about her
We
kids.
know Rhaenys is dead, and we know Aemond is
Yeah.
alive, and then so Aegon, I think, is the big question mark.
I think it'll be really interesting if Aegon is like crippled in the same way that Viserys was.
Yes, well, that's the
Like to
thing.
live as a crippled king. That would be cool.
I think that would be quite cool to see, like a young sort of yeah. But also, and it'd be interesting to
Because it would
see.
again do the parallels between Daemon and Viserys and Aegon and like we've talked about how like these brotherly pairs just like almost perfectly line up just with a little bit of like desyncing and
Yeah.
having like a crippled king versus a warrior king, warrior brother would be
Yes.
nifty.
That's very interesting. Actually, that's probably a lot better than what I was going to say, which was I think Alicent, like I think he becomes severely bedridden almost, and I think Alicent just puts a pillow over his face. Because and maybe in the hope that who would, like, I suppose it would be,
I mean, if he
well,
is severely bedridden, I wouldn't put it past the showrunners to have a scene where Alicent is deeply tempted.
yeah, maybe
Like,
deeply.
I think she will be tested to not put a pillow over his face. Like,
I
because the way that they presented her character, that seems just like to resist doing that would be such a challenge.
Because I think, well, now, depending on which line you take, Aemond could be next in line for the throne. And we don't know very much about Alicent and Aemond's relationship, but we do know that Aemond seeks a mother figure in someone else.
Oh, sorry, I just spotted a metaphor. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Alicent dropped the dragon on the floor
Oh
in the same
yeah.
episode that Sunfire hit the floor at the point where Aegon stumbled into the room. Is that when he stumbled into the room? I feel like he was that. I
Yeah,
mean, later scene when he came
no,
in,
he
but
stumbled
like she
into the room
definitely
and she
dropped the dragon.
total
Sorry,
foreshadowing there.
I was.
Yeah. Well, I
I thought
almost did.
that was just a callback, but it was a call
Yeah.
forward. Ah, both directions. I'm in the circle.
Whenever you see a dragon. Like every time you see a dragon toy, it usually like indicates something. But see, so if you go by the male line, Aemond is the next in line because Jaehaerys
Yeah.
was murdered. However,
Decapped.
you could argue that if you're going down the gender neutral line, then it would be Jaehaera that would become
Right, but that
the queen.
would refute Aegon's whole claim if he were to go
Yeah, if he
with
were to
that,
approve
because
a
his
female
whole claim is
line.
based off of that he's the male, the next
Yeah.
male in the line,
Like if he
and
claims that he has the right over Rhaenyra
that he has
because he's
ranked
a
over his
man and
older
then gives it
sister.
to his daughter, that would go against
It'd
that
be
whole
hypocritical.
campaign pitch.
Yeah. Unless they play the claim that Viserys changed his mind on his deathbed, which would rely on Alicent's commit to the bit, right?
Where she now is
She's now doubting and
just she's
researching.
now
Only,
doubting.
like, just lying to herself at this point, basically.
It's very interesting as well that like Larys knows Alicent well enough. He was like, "You've never been interested in this dragon lore before." And now she's like poring over tomes to try and indicate her thought process. But by the end of that conversation with Larys, she was like, "It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter." what he said. It's not my doubt in anymore. It's not about what I believe. It's about the war is happening, which I found. Again, like it was interesting, like how much changed in the course of that conversation, where she went from clearly researching what Rhaenyra had told her and trying to work out the truth of what Viserys meant, to actually it doesn't matter anymore. A kitty.
Oh,
Sir Parker.
Ooh.
So
Yeah.
we could see an Aemond King in the next episode then. Maybe.
Potentially, or at least an Aemond Regent.
Protector of the realm.
Protector of
Protector of the
the
realm. Yeah.
So, that'd be quite, and maybe he it could be like, because in medieval politics, it's often the case that, like the protector of the realm until maybe, well, I don't know. Like you say, defaulting to the female line would run yeah, but maybe that inconsistency might in fact be the point, that actually it doesn't matter who's in line. Like, power resides where people think it resides, right? So it might be the case. So it might make the point. It might make the point of breaking that logic on purpose, so that Jaehaera becomes or is in line to become the queen. But obviously, being so young, Aemond takes Helaena as maybe a wife, and sort of governs in her stead until she's of age. However, I would
Well,
then
she's
assume.
of age.
No, I mean Jaehaera, as in the
Oh,
one that
Jaehaera, okay.
wasn't, yeah. Yeah, or a male heir is come up, comes about. And I would imagine that, so either, like, but then I would imagine the plot would go that Jaehaera then dies for whatever reason, and or that Helena and Aemond make another heir, possibly. That would be, I don't know, something like. That's where my guesses get sort of vaguely going. However, they did mention, of course, Daeron Targaryen, but I think I know what happens with
Yeah.
Dagon Targaryen. I think he,
But
I
it's
think.
interesting that we still haven't met him. So is he going to be like a
I
massive
know.
anticlimax where he rides in on his dragon and is like super cool and then just immediately gets eaten by like Caraxes or Syrax? Just like single nom. Like he comes, like they swirl the music. And then
He's
doo,
in.
doo, 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 like the prince that was promised, he's the great unknown heir. He comes in swinging his sword and just gets conked.
He's in Old Town, I think.
He's in Old Town at the moment, and as I understand it, he's not been
But
cast for this
someone sent a letter
series.
to him.
Oh wait, he's not in this season?
I don't think anyone's been cast for it, so I think he'll be like the.
I was expecting him to show up in the episode.
I was expecting him to show up because they had a line about your youngest son, send for him, he can fly up, he's got a dragon of sling age or something.
Yeah, I mean, it could. I don't know if the sh like, I don't know if there's a possibility of the show manage, whether or not the show's just being super coy, and actually it might be some
This is
grand
not a
reveal.
show for being coy.
So I don't know, but yeah, I think from what I've gathered, I could be wrong. It might, misinformation on the internet and all that, but it could be the case that it's like the reveal in episode in early season three. And it might be something to kick that off with. But yeah, no,
Although
there's.
in terms of other green kids, because whenever Helena's on screen, I'm like, metaphors, where's the future? The only thing I could see that she was vaguely paying attention to was she had like a little mini bird cage. Probably something to keep an eye out, something imprisoned, something trapped. I don't know whether or not it might be like a metaphor for if, like, I don't know if Aegon is going to be paralytic, so maybe he's locked in. But I don't know, it just made me thinking about cages over the next couple of episodes. I've also made a note that basically Aegon's filling up his small council with a bunch of child knights who are just doofuses who are getting drunk.
You mean
and
Kingsguard?
boring.
Yeah.
All of his guys are just absolute numpties.
Yeah, his one buddy who's just like standing in the background, like shuffling uncomfortably because the suit
Like
doesn't fit him, and
hungover, or like maybe
yeah.
he caught something in the brothel. Like he's, and then the
Yeah.
immediately like when Aegon's like, oh, I've changed my mind because Laris has manipulated the frick out of me. They're all like, oh yeah, good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've written down, I can't remember who said what. I think it might have been Laris, but I put a little reference to Cersei's line about ripping up weeds one by one. Oh, it was Laris was saying that like rumors among the small folk spread like weeds. And it's hard to pull back from rumors once they've started spreading. And that reminded me of Cersei's line about being on throne is like lying in bed of weeds, ripping them up one by one so before they can strangle you in your sleep. And I just again, those sort of visual references. I like that. Laris was officially titled Master of Whisperers on the same day or in the same context that Missaria decided that she was going to become Mistress of Whisperers. So we might have a worm versus rat thing coming up in the future.
I'm going to be interested to see what they
Because they've
do with
already got
Missaria.
some banter, because, you
Yeah.
know, he's tried to set her on fire.
Oh, he did, didn't he? Yeah.
He's a one-trick pony.
Arson. It's all he's got is arson, and he doesn't have a dragon. Give him a dragon. Just give him.
They had the shot of the body still hanging, and also, did Christian get a haircut?
Oh God, yeah.
Did he get a
Someone
haircut
said
with his promotion?
I heard someone say that the only person that hates Criston Cole more than us is his barber. Like, yeah. But I suppose,
This is
like,
true.
it's I think it's like when he was in King's Landing, he grew out his hair because, you know, like he doesn't need it. He doesn't need the short back and sides ready for battle. And when it's like, oh shit, right, we're actually going to proper war, you know, get the haircut, doesn't become, you know, it's sort of like
He's
that's a
gonna
biz.
get some more grays in there because my
Okay.
God, that dude.
Yeah, he's old.
Age like fine wine.
Like, yeah, like that's kind of the thing, isn't it? It's like he's like the same age as he was in episode one. Like this guy has not aged a day in 20 years.
On his
Yeah, like
jeans. Dornish, yeah.
Dornish
Dornish
jeans. Like my brain just went to like trousers for a
the
minute, and I was
trousers.
like, it's. What would Dornish jeans look like? Would they have like, you know, like a sun on the butt cheek?
Yeah, they'd be
I
like I think they'd probably be like three quarter length cargo jeans or something. That's kind of this. But like, yeah, I kind of like. I like him as a character. I like him as a like a general in like he's a lot more like interesting
Yeah,
because
I did enjoy the fact that he's a dum-dum at court, but actually when it comes to it was stupid to send the twin after Rhaenyra, but in terms of actually plotting out a battle plan to get Rhaenyra to release the dragons and then like take out one of her dragon riders, the plan worked beautifully. He did exactly what he needed to do to spring that trap. If it wasn't for Aegon being so impotent that he had to go out and, you know, go out and do something stupid, it would have been his plan would have worked flawlessly.
Yeah, and I mean Rook's Rest, if you think about it, is kind of an essential point because it's basically if you were to get troops. If you want, so into if you don't see, it's a bit difficult. It's a bit like it depends how you use ships, right? If you don't have that many ships, you've got to funnel troops over through basically the shortest body of water, which would be from Dragonstone to Rook's Rest. If you had a shit ton of ships, which they do, they can go straight from Dragonstone to King's Landing, I think, right? I mean, obviously, I don't know the numbers, but Rook, in terms of like a land advantage, Rook's Rest is everything. And even if you don't take it from the point of defense, you definitely want to take it from a point of attack because that would be a great launching area for a surprise attack, or not even like or a quick attack. So,
Well, I like the idea that in the same way, like, everyone thinks power resides in Harrenhal, but Harrenhal is a dead seat. I like the idea that no one thinks Raven Roost is worth anything, but actually you can set it up as a perfect trap spring. And that is a nice sort of poetical byline.
Yeah. I got the old quartermaster map up here. So hang on a minute, let me just get set up. Right, so we've got so I'm pointing to we've got the Stepstones, so north of the Stepstones, Blackwater, yeah, so Blackwater Bay. So we've got like the mouth of Blackwater Bay. Rook's Rest. Yeah, so like Rook's Rest from Dragonstone and Driftmark. So the barricade just closes in Blackwater Bay, right? The
Yes. Yeah, that sounds right.
yeah. So that's yeah, so if actually they in order to break the blockade, they would either need Rook's Rest or like Sharp Point or and Stone Dance, which is like the other side of Blackwater Bay, the opposite side of the horseshoe. So and then they could launch their attack on Driftmark by yeah, or that would be where they would attack the blockade. Yeah. They're probably going for the blockade then, really. That would be and yeah. But apparent so what seems to be quite interesting is how wealthy the Valyrian household is. I believe at this time they were the most wealthiest of all the families, which makes sense because they've got biggest navy and they've plundered like half of ASOS, right?
Yeah, I think this is the generation of change where Valyrians were the big money makers, and then at the tail end of this particular bat of battles, Valyrians are wiped out, and then the Lannisters really take point.
That's it. So, okay, actually looking at oh my gosh, I really didn't put this so much in perspective, but the difference between so King's Landing, you've got King's Landing, and then northeast, you've got Rook's Rest, which you go past Duskendale for. And then northwest, you've got Isle of Faces, Harrenhal, God's Eye, etc. So, really, like, you can go from Rook's Rest to Harrenhal probably relatively quickly, anyway.
Well, the whole point is everyone thought he was going to Harrenhal, so it is, it's got to be close enough to trick people into thinking that's what he was going to do.
Did they mention Duskendale?
Yes. So Duskendale was wiped out on their way to Raven's Roost. That was one of the things that they brought up in our council, being like, Duskendale's fallen, and they're like, well, shit, release the dragons.
And then so Stokeworth, Rosby, Duskendale, were they were absorbed into Criston Cole's army. Am I right?
Yes, so the one they either surrendered, and they had that interesting scene where the Lord of Duskendale was like, basically, screw you, Criston Cole, I will get you in, you'll be cursed next life. Which makes me think potentially, if we're thinking about poetic ends for characters, maybe Cole will be decapitated at some point in the future. Like, he talked about sullying the cloak and all of that jazz, and everything he said was true. It was basically a death curse. So I'll be interested to see whether or not Cole's happen like comeuppance is related to that particular death, because it was a classic, like, I'll get you in the next life. You'll be cursed because you're killing me unwantedly. Yeah, so Duskendale
Oh,
was taken out all the way through.
I've got thoughts.
I'm curious if they're gonna keep Bull's death the same as the book, because I feel like that's something they might just switch up completely.
Level 3
Cole.
done knows something.
When he's at Duskendale and he does that beheading scene, and he gets
Mm-hmm.
called Kingmaker as an insult, does that mean? I'm calling it now. I should know this because I'm sure I have known this and like I'm forgetting it. I think the next person on the throne is almost certainly Aemond. For how long, I don't know, but
Well, like
because
I think Cole's been told that because he placed the crown on Aegon's head, like famously,
yes,
like it was
but
the King of Guard
also
that placed the crown.
with House of Dragon, Game of Thrones, and all that, there are echo meanings, right? There are me like so things like echo and
Oh, is it
reiterate and come around,
forward
right?
and back? Yeah.
And when something is often said as a good thing, it can be interpreted as a bad thing and vice versa. So I think when he called him Kingmaker, yes, there is the yeah, he put the crown on Aegon's head, but at the same time, he's making Aemond king, right? Like he's strategizing with him, he's plotting with him. What happens in the wake of Rook's Rest could determine whether or not Aemond becomes king. Again, Kingmaker. Did
I did also enjoy. Oh, sorry, you go.
Jaime Lannister kill any other kings other than Mad King Aerys?
No.
Not really.
No, he didn't kill Joffrey, he didn't kill Cersei,
He
he
didn't
didn't
kill. He didn't kill.
Tommen,
He didn't kill. What's the name of
Daenerys, Daenerys,
the
Robert,
gay brother,
Renly,
Renly. He didn't kill Renly. He didn't kill Stannis.
Stannis. He didn't kill Euron Greyjoy. He didn't kill the other.
There's a lot of
Oh,
people he
wait!
didn't kill.
We found a king that he killed. Euron Greyjoy.
Wasn't killed by Jaime.
Yeah, he did.
I
Oh,
forget.
sorry, the
Oh,
mic.
sorry. I was thinking of
Oh, wait. Yeah,
I was thinking of Balon Greyjoy, who was
I
killed by
totally
Euron Greyjoy,
forgot.
but Jaime did kill Euron in the series, but I doubt that'll happen in the books.
I totally forgot about that. When did Jaime
Dirty
kill him
pirate fight
again?
in the last episode. The
It's like
dirty pirate fight on the beach in the
it's
last
like
episode where they like have a proper
oh
tussle in the sand.
yeah
I
it was
think
like
someone gets stabbed in the dick.
oh no
That was a
yeah
new that was a low point. That was like two dads fighting at a wedding. It was fucking awful. It was oh yeah I don't even know if we're gonna count
I
that, to be
wiped
honest.
that from my memory for a reason.
Was so dumb.
It was so dumb. There
It
was
was painful.
no point to it. I suppose. Oh my God. See, I don't even know if this m helps my case or hinders it, or whether or not just muddies the waters, making it less convincing. Because it's like, yes, well, because I suppose. But Euron actually never married Cersei. Did he? No, he didn't.
No.
There wasn't a ceremony, and he definitely never got to sleep with her. Did
But he
he?
declared himself King of the Iron Islands, I guess. Does that count? Kind
Did
of, I
she
guess.
sleep with him? She might have just slept with him for funsies.
She slept. Well, I think she slept with him to like, lure him into the alliance, I guess. I would find it hard to believe that she would have actually gone the whole hog and married him. Maybe married, killed him on the wedding night or something. But my God, like after what Cersei's gone through with
Cersei
Robert.
choices, marry, fuck, kill. So she fucks her brother. She
Yeah, well, in this case, it's fuck,
marries
marry,
your own,
kill.
kills.
Yeah, it's So honestly, I honestly don't know if that makes my case stronger or weaker that Jaime Lannister technically kills two kings, amongst a story of what, like 10 kings? I mean, don't get me wrong, as far as king slaying goes, a 1 in 5 success rate is pretty good, but not quite as good as Liz Truss, but quite good. So I don't know, but like, so Kingmaker is like, it does feel like Criston Cole is kind of making Aemond as a king. I think Aemond is destined to sit on the Iron Throne for a period of time, because I think it's always like, I think the foreshadowing is just like kind of relentless at this point. He talks about duty. He studies like he's going to be king. He trains to fight like he's going to be
I
king.
think.
He's got the biggest dragon like a king should have. He's at small council meetings without a title, because he's just expected to be there because he commands the respect of the council. He's strategic. He
I
can command.
think
He liaises with the head of the
gonna
Kingsguard, for
be
God's, you know, like he's right there. He's
like
more of a king than Aegon is. Sorry, you're.
well, I think it's gonna be a Daemon Viserys repeat where he never quite reaches it. And in many ways
Possibly.
he should be. So he might sit the throne in the same way Daemon sat the throne in episode 1. But it's not going to be in a position where he's actually king. He's always going to be just an inch off it.
Could be, yeah. That does also sound very plausible, yeah. And also, the foreshadowing is so relentless. Like it might, it is almost set up to be an ultimate red herring, right? Usually, if the show is hammering a point in really hard, it wants you to get it so that it can misdirect you. And I think it might. I mean, it obviously didn't misdirect you, and it may have misdirected me. But I think that's, you know. Oh man,
We
I'm.
shall see.
Yeah, this is. Oh man, I'm. This is like old Game of Thrones shit. This is.
I know, I love it. I love actually being able to enjoy this series rather than dirty pirate fights on the beach.
Yeah. Honest to goodness, after. I mean, I believe I've heard rumors that after House of the Dragon, this the Dance of the Dragons wraps up, that there might be like more story in a different period of history with different actors and stuff, like a soft reboot, as it were, of House of the Dragon.
I'd
I
be up for
honest to
that. If
goodness,
they keep to the writing quality of this series, then I'd be up for so much more.
all of the yeah, if they manage to keep this like pool of talent with like Ryan Condal and the rest of them, like I think I would like to see them do. The only thing that hamstrings this House of the Dragon is that it's a prequel, and we are limited in our sort of in the mystery, right? There's a lot of mystery in Game of Thrones, there's a lot of mystery in House of the Dragon, and I love a good mystery, but like the mystery is within within a set parameters, because we know the destination. Whereas if they did a sequel, you know, it'd be great. And it doesn't even have, it could just be more Game of Thrones. Like it could be I don't know, the Firewalkers are coming in from the west, from the east, you know, like, or you know, the Snow King come, the Snow Ice King comes again, you know, like I don't, you know, the premise is even less
Round
important.
two.
Round two, that's it, yeah.
Ice King comes again. It's totally the fourth
Yeah,
spin-off.
too icy, too
Well,
furious.
they wanted to do like that Jon Snow show, right? But that got canceled.
I wouldn't have watched the Jon Snow. Like, Kit Harington's fine, but I never found his interpretation of Jon Snow particularly interesting. Like, at the Even in like the peak of Game of Thrones, Jon Snow plotline was it was fine. It wasn't one of the ones I was like invested in finding out. I was like, oh, he'll be the king that was the prince that was promised, whatever. Like in the books, he's much more interesting. And then Kit Harington's performance of it was fine, but in
I
comparison to the other characters.
like John in the show up until his resurrection, and then it
And
just
that it was real
got he
downhill.
got boring. Yeah.
Yeah, but I liked a lot of the other characters in the North. I like Alistair Thorne. Like that, you know, whenever he was on screen, he was holding your attention. I like Master Aemon. I like, Tormund. There were a lot. I was quite invested in a lot of what was happening up north, but
Like
I
the
don't know
North
if you
was
can.
interesting, but
I don't know if you can
Jon
pin a whole
Snow as
show on
central
it.
character was a bit.
Yeah, and even and I gotta be honest, in a lot of cases, Bran could have been more interesting as well.
Oh, Bran was a robot.
Bran was as boring as a just
Yeah.
like a tree stump.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I think, yeah, I wish they could have done a lot more with that. But yeah, and also, like, it's kind of sullen. I like the, like, what about the Nymeria and the Dornish stuff or something like that? Like, okay, I'm going to be honest, right? And this is going to, like, feel free to, like, ban me from the internet or whatever, right? But on rewatch of Game of Thrones, the Dorne plotline weren't that bad. I'm saying it, the Dorne plotline weren't that bad. I know
I
that's
never
sacrilege.
understood. It wasn't my favorite, but I never understood the overwhelming hate for it.
I think the
I think
overwhelming.
the thing is, in the books, there was so much love for the Dorne plotline because they did a lot of kind of interesting stuff with it, and because you had a really diverse set of sand snakes that all had really interesting backstories and really interesting, like, different interpretations of how to do vengeance. You do a lot with those really unique characters and what they can do. Like, one of the sand snakes is posing as a man in Old Town as a spy. Like, right now in the chronology of the current release books of Game of Thrones, of like Song of Ice and Fire. Like, one of the sand snakes is still alive, being cool, like, posing as a boy in Old Town, doing spy shit in the Maesters. Like,
Yeah,
that
no.
is like a really cool thread to pull. And instead, they cast five relatively similar looking actresses, all who had not really that much personality going on, who were then wiped out. And
Yeah.
it lacked a lot of the spice of the books.
Yeah, no, I get the sort of like, oh yeah, so they've reduced what was probably many people's favorite bits of the books, or certainly, yeah, like a highly acclaimed bit, to a much more simple plot line. But it wasn't as like everything in the North is very dour. Like it was a vibes-based story in a lot of cases. Like it was just an adventure. They even sort of spell it out relatively overtly. Oh, we're off to rescue a princess. And I think that, like, yeah, like it didn't have the twists and turns of a proper Game of Thrones plot, but like compared to the it added to the bits around it as well. There were, like a lot of the rest of the plot was very dour at the time and kind of a bit, sullen. And the colors of Dawn and the lightness of it really kind of it was okay, like I'm not going to die on that hill, and I'm not going to say that it couldn't have been done really well, like a lot better in the books, but
I
I'm not
mean,
in
the
that.
thing is, in comparison to the turd that is the last couple of seasons, the Dawn plotline is pretty shiny.
Yeah, like it's and also that kind of, yeah, like watching the whole thing as a whole, there were Yeah, there were there on rewatch, a lot of earlier Game of Thrones stuff was quite bad as well. It's just that,
Yeah, some of the exposition was a bit chunky.
like I definitely season two House of the Dragon feels far and away the most refined, and is only held back by things that it has basically no control over. It's held by the back ba is held back by the fact that it's a prequel. It's held back by the fact that there is it obviously has not been as much time and depth to a lot of the characters, but they're filling that in infinitely better than you can realistically even expect of them. It's just a literal matter of time, right? They are but mere mortals making this show at the end of the day, and it but and I like I said, I give the episode 5 a 10 out of 10. Like it's the second 10 out of a 10 in the series in my opinion. I couldn't call whether or not this or episode 2 was like the best of House of the Dragon so far. Different maybe for different reasons, but I don't know. Do you how does it place on your guys's like ranking system?
Stress that or the episode 5, I think. Yeah, 10 out of 10 for me, for sure.
don't know, because I, as I said, normally I watch each episode at least 2 to 3 times before doing the dishes, and instead of doing that, I watch both the episodes back to back one time because this last couple of weeks have been a bit nuts. So I feel like they engrossed me. I was drawn in, and there was like, again, there was enough answers and enough like blatant foreshadowing with an immediate payoff, and there was enough. Like there was enough things set up to follow through later, as well as enough stuff that was both given and resolved within the episode, enough that was also resolving stuff from previous episodes. But because I watched them back to back as well, I think I'm going to view these two episodes kind of a one anyway. So it was very enjoyable. I definitely was engrossed. I don't know whether or not I could put a rating to it without watching it at least
Absolutely.
one more time, just so that I've got an equal experience to what I would normally have.
You got the consistent benchmark testing, absolutely. And I mean, I'm gonna rewatch these again, before the. I always say that like it's hard to find the time. It's 2 hours, but
It's hard.
I really do want to try and find the time to get through them again, those last two episodes, because they, like this is the best of it. But also with Rayna, who was sent away to Essos with
Yeah, I've got Rayna the
four.
Unloved in my notes.
I'd be so pissed if I was her. She seems to like, but
Oh, yeah.
the
She might
she
get a hatchling. She might finally get a hatchling.
I she has to, right? Like, she's got four eggs, three of which appear in Game of Thrones.
Game of
Where does the
Thrones,
other egg
yeah.
go?
Which
So
is interesting because from what I've heard from the books, the general consensus is Dany's eggs were actually potentially hatched from Dreamfire and were something to do with, I think, one of Viserys's aunts that took it down to Essos. I feel like there's a chain, like there was a cool like
something like
pirate
that.
lady. There was a cool pirate lady, Targaryen at some point, who was the one who, like, I think she went off, had a lesbian affair with a cool pirate lady, stole some of Dreamfire's eggs, and took them off to Essos. So I don't mind the messing with the continuity of the books because that's absolutely fine. Like for something like Easter egg that is literally dragon eggs that look like Dany's eggs, it totally makes sense for that to be sort of the kind of throwaway reference to Game of Thrones proper that you can get away without it being like, "Ha, Melisandre," or "Look, this is going to be the thing." Like the dagger and Dany's eggs are the sort of things you can get away with showing where it totally makes sense
Yeah,
without
they
being
are
too much
artifacts,
like
yeah.
hook you there. But
Yeah,
yeah,
and
poor old Ray, Rayna, poor old Rayna.
yeah. But also it could be the case that depending on how the Dance of Dragons pans out, one of the things about Dance of Dragons that I'm really enjoying is that basically it's propaganda wars in a lot of cases. And it might very well be the case that in the chaos that's as the chaos plays out, it could be the case that the history of where the eggs comes from kind of gets muddied, and maybe
Yeah.
people start making claims to them. They go, actually, those are our eggs because they are from so and so, da 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 da. And I mean, I'm only shooting from the hip here, but it's distinctly possible, especially if Rhaena were to hatch one of those dragons and die. Where do those three eggs go? Do they go to, was it that Mopatis guy or someone else? Maybe they
Yeah,
get
well,
handed around a bit.
presumably if they're setting it up that they're ending up in Pentos, it kind of works out pretty well that that would then all round to Dany in the Amorphous future. Like it was sad to see the baby kids go. I'll be interested to know. So obviously, part of what's happening with Daemon and his hallucinations, poison, mold issues, slash some other magic shit that's going on with him is he's not able to focus on the political situation very well. And so I don't think he's been informed that Rhaemyra was attacked in her own home and that she's sending their kids away. Because he's
He
been theoretically
doesn't,
out
does
of contact
he?
this whole time. So he's going to come back home and
Mm.
his kids are going to be gone. So we've got Baylor, who he somewhat notices as a human being occasionally. Rayna, who he's never noticed, who's going to be gone. But then his like trueborn kids with Ramira are going to just be gone. He's going to come back to his like cared for descendants who are true Targaryen incest babies, like gone.
Yeah.
And like he's gonna be pissed.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah, it's like, where do you put them?
He hasn't really shown any affection to either of his kids
Well,
so
we've seen
far.
him not pay any attention to like Laena's kids. Like when Rhaemyra was pregnant, he was like
Right.
rubbing her belly. He like helped bring baby Aegon the Younger to see Viserys. Like there is, at least even with these dreams, there is a level of him loving Rhaemyra because he loved his brother. And by proxy, he would probably love his kids because they're, his brother's grandkids. Incest is fun. Like, yeah, so, but either way, he's gonna, like, how much of the political situation is he actually able to comprehend in his mental state at the moment? Because he had it, like, saying to a Tully, why don't you just put a pillow over your grandfather's face? When the Tully's words are like family duty honor, like that's not him being a sassy prince, that's him completely and utterly forgetting what the plot of the story
It's
is.
like I've got this cloak of invisibility. I put it on whenever I murder someone. You got to make sure the hood goes up, and you
To
can basically just get
cover
away
your
with any
big wig.
crimes. Yeah.
I have to say that they're absolute cowards for not saying the name of Grover's father, or is it Oscar? Who is the Tully that we see in the episode? Is that Grover or Oscar?
I think they have named Grover the Muppet Tullies, yeah.
But I think Oscar is the grandson of Grover, but they don't name who Oscar's father is, and that's Elmo. Elmo Tully.
That okay, yeah. So they got two out of three of them.
I mean,
And he has
in
a
terms
brother
of.
named Kermit, but I don't know if Kermit is gonna, I think they might have cut Kermit from the show.
I mean, they can probably like pronounce it like Kermit or like there's probably a way of doing it that
I
sounds
think they should have
cooler
gone
than.
all out with it. I think they should have added a couple, like Swedish
Like
Chef
Mrs.
Tully
Piggy. Yeah,
Swedish Chef Tully.
And Beaker Tully.
What are the two old men?
The guys in the balcony.
It's like oh man, I love those guys. They're great. My head is just going to Marley and
such
Marley
good
from.
commentary on this show. Yeah, Marley and Marley. Woo! They would
That
make
is.
like the most like I thought he was gonna like oh, this is the worst show in the world. I could be in the audience. Well, you could be being crushed under a dragon. Ooh!
Stalter and Waldorf.
That's the
Stalter and
one.
Waldorf Tully.
Statler.
Those
Damien, yes, Statler.
would
Those would
see a
be good
character being
names.
called
Those would be great
Waldorf.
names. Those are actual names that would fit in
100%.
the Game of Thrones world, yeah.
100%.
Waldorf Tully,
Like, one of them's a Bracken and one of them's a Blackwood. And they're just
yeah.
bantering.
Yeah.
I did wonder, like, in the episode where they first reintroduced the Brackens and the Blackwoods, I was like, is one of these dudes going to be the one who tried to get Rhaemyra back in the day and end up stabbing the other one in the gut? Like, the little kid who was like, yes, and then they did actually introduce him later on, and I was like, okay. But then Daemon clearly didn't have the brain capacity to be like, is this the one who got like stabbed someone to try and win Rhaemyra's hand?
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, that's them.
I'm gonna be interested to see like how what kind of army is Daemon actually gonna raise? Like, does the
He's
Because,
not
like,
doing great politicking right
yeah,
now.
he seems to be
Kind
flailing
of.
around a lot.
I mean, he's high slash poison slash cursed slash haunted. Like, I'm curious as to which one he is. Because
Well, it's we're not
he's
good.
just floundered for two episodes.
He's I
Which,
mean, he's just.
for a very motivated character, seeing him flounder is a bit annoying.
This is just, I think this is just, I understand that a lot of this stuff in Harrenhal is new to the show and not in Fire and Blood, because I think, like, you got Matt Smith, you've paid for Matt Smith, you got to get your money's worth out of Matt Smith, right? Like, he's giving up probably some Marvel movie or something to do this, right? So,
He's giving up Morbius too.
yeah.
Morbius
Yeah. So
Morbius
back
too,
to the
He deserves
Morbius.
another shot at a different Marvel character.
So I
Oh,
yeah, so
wouldn't it be
like
funny if he didn't manage to get into Morbius, but then like got to star in Blade?
So if
Like
they ever
another
make that
vampire
movie.
character.
I think a lot of this I think some of this is going to be like unfolding some lore around Harrenhal, which I think is interesting. Like, it's an interesting place. It's
I mean,
pivotal
Alice has
in,
got vibes.
yeah. Alice is a good on-screen presence. Like, she's kind of good. Like, she's. I like her more than Melisandre, because Melisandre was a one-note song. I am mystical woman. I see the future. I can do
I'm
mysterious
sexy
magic.
redheads.
Oh
Here's tits.
yeah. And it, when in doubt, I'm sexy, so I can dazzle you with that. Whereas, yeah, with
I
Alice,
can shoot demons out of me.
The first thing you notice about Alice is that she's got a bit of wit to her, right? She, like, you're a bastard. Oh, I'm all right once you get to know me. Like,
She's
it's.
quite mature as well. Like she's got a. She's not like a classic like tween witch. She's got some like old world about her.
She looks like, I don't know, what would you say, 20s? But she, like, for all we know, she could be 400, right? And she does have that, like, cadence of of someone who's been there a while, right? I'm not necessarily saying she's a million years old or whatever, but, like, she's obviously a seasoned veteran of Harrenhal. So, yeah, I'm actually really enjoying that, even though it's a bit of a side thing that is kind of supposed to be filler. It's like, I like it. Like, they've decided to, like, take Damon and give like, there is some character development for Damon, but I think a lot of what is being shown through Damon's perspective is Harrenhal itself. It is this weird and twisted castle, and he's just the plot device that we're sort of seeing Harrenhal through, I guess. I mean, there'll be a point to it,
I'm interested to
but
see like his vision so far of being quite being both telling and very abstract, which I've been enjoying a lot. But they're also like they're not like there's a habit usually when a character starts hallucinating in this sort of media where they make it slower and more progressive. So you have like they're kind of mumbling to themselves and you don't really see what they're seeing and maybe like they see something out the corner of their eye but you don't really like you can kind of write it off and this went straight to like waking hallucinations that are distracting him from his job and so like it's more of a mission to see how far down the rabbit hole and how badly it affects him before it gets better
It
more
might be the
than a
case that
progression to see how it get worse.
it might be a case that he just goes home and all is well. But what I hope to see, we're seeing some weirwood magic here and that kind of stuff. I would like to see more about the Isle of Faces. I hope that he takes a jaunt over there, because the thing is, right, the Isle of Faces really kind of, I don't know, like, you look at the map, right? You look at the map of Westeros, and you got this eye, God's eye, right in the middle of the island, where the only thing that we see for it, right, is the only scene that is set on it is the scene where Lyanna Stark gets married to Aegon. Is it Aegon Targaryen, the son of the Mad Prince, Mad King?
Rhaegar,
that's the one. Yeah,
Rhaegar.
So yeah, that took place, as I understand it, on the Isle of Faces. But by Harrenhal was where the Ned Stark and Robert Baratheon and their party camped up at the it's episode 2. So yeah, I want to see Isle of Faces more. I want to see, like, you know, like, so much has happened there, and actually what might be quite interesting as well, and I don't know if they've done this, is they might start opening up Harrenhal, as in, like, more lore about Harrenhal, more lore about the Central Riverlands, because Night of the Seven Kingdoms is coming down the pipeline, and it's like, you know, it's a little bit of, like, familiarizing the audience with the magic and mystery around Harrenhal, how it's, you know, got that connection to the old gods, and then how when that gets tied in with is it the big no, the tourney of Harrenhal is that's not Duncan the Tall. Actually,
tourney,
no, I'm thinking
Harrenhal is where Ned's brother meets Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar meets Lyanna Stark.
I'm thinking of Summerhall. Is it Summerhall?
Hall is where Danny is born, and Egg, once he's all grown up, dies trying to make dragons happen.
Ah, okay. Is that Summerhall?
And that's Summerhall, yeah. So that's where Jenny of Oldstones is and all that jazz.
Where's
which
Summerhall?
In fact, I need to check this, because I thought when Damon was hearing humming and then he came across baby Rhaenyra and sewing up the baby neck, that she was humming Jenny of Oldstones. But actually, I need to maybe go back and see whether or not she was humming the lullaby that she was singing to Nymeria.
Hmm.
It'd be interesting. I'm sure there's something on this, like, behind the scenes regarding soundtracking, what tune Vision Baby Rhaenyra was humming. Because I feel like that's a sort of, like the same sort of, if you are musically literate, which I am not, if you're the kind of person who is musically literate, I'm sure, like, it was the equivalent of hearing the Reigns of Castamere in the Red Wedding. Like, there was probably what she was humming meant something from what we've seen before or what we're coming after.
Yeah.
It's probably pretty cool. Like, I love how abstract the visions are. And, like, yeah.
Nice. Jenny, you said you had a hard out at 5:30, so...
Yes, so quick notes. We've already talked about the baby Blackwood being the one that we meet later. Burning the mill is a cycle of revenge. That's not my thought. I clicked on UltraFX and then closed the tab before I could hear much more because I didn't want to be spoiled. But thank you, UltraFX, for that.
There was a lot of rounds and cycles in that,
Cannot fault the keeping of oaths is something that's interesting that Rhaenyra said. Aegon was using the dagger as just a table prop because he doesn't know about the Song of Ice and Fire, and was, like, using it to, like, stab the table and just being a little shit, and had it on him at the point where the battle was happening, and Aemond has now picked up Aegon's dagger, which he is educated enough, and probably Aegon got rid of all of the books about Valyria, and he said he just put them away, he didn't burn them, but Aegon's super duper into history, so I'm thinking
that
maybe
clarification
Aegon
is important.
All of Viserys's books, so that maybe he could read about the Song of Ice and Fire and believe himself to be the prince that was promised,
and legitimizes him, or uses that information to legitimize himself as king.
Potentially, he could then say, well, actually, my father was talking about me, the prince that was promised, that is in the old Valyrian book, that maybe Sambol Tarly in the future will read, which was part of Viserys's book collection, which a Aegon kicked out of his offices at the same point that he probably was smashing up Aegon's statues. He probably got rid of all of Viserys's old books, but I suspect that Aemond immediately was like, yoink. I'm assuming that Lord Hand is able to command armies, but it seems really stupid to put your Lord Commander as Lord Hand because then who is your Lord
Yeah,
Commander? And
you've
if you're
basically
sending out
not
your
got a
Lord
hand.
Hand into battle, then you've got like no intelligence or like
Well,
no second
also he
command.
can do not, like, being a hand doesn't help him as a commander of an army in any way, shape, or form. Like, being a
No.
hand of the king is an administrative role. He literally is he doesn't have a hand of the king. Like, everyone around that small council table is like literally they got their head in their hands by like you've just gotten rid of like the team leader. Like, you what's or like
Exactly.
you
So
know
that's why Alicent's like, guys, grow the fuck up. Like, there is no one running this council right now. Which I like it's gonna be part of the collapse of the council. So that's like, and also like Aegon's already made a minor enemy of the Lannisters because he was like belittling him when Jacerys was there. Little kid, he was like belittling the Lannisters with that. He's told them that he's bored, he doesn't listen to Orwyle, he's accused them of being traitors, he's hiring dumb shits to be the Kingsguard, who are clearly like they have no sense of like piety or like patience or any of the skill sets that they need, which is why Christian was like, oh my god, you guys just stand up. Stand up straight while you're around me, at least. They're turning up hungover. They have no respect for like the chastity of their role. Like he's like an unpopular dude. I
Yeah,
don't
it's all
know
falling apart
whether or
for
not.
him.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not you guys found the advert breaks really jarring this episode, or I think it was episode one. I found the episode breaks really jarring. There was a point where Aemond had like a cool line, and then it cut to adverts, and it just felt really strange.
You watched it
You
on
guys find that?
Sky Atlantic.
I watch it on Now TV.
Now TV. I straight up pirated it, so I didn't have ad breaks.
Well, it wasn't an advert. They basically just do like a 20-second pause with a flash screen, so it fades in and then fades out again. But I found it really weirdly edited.
Actually, the now you mentioned that the battle scene, I kept thinking when it kept fading to black, and I was like, "Is this going to be a cliffhanger? Is this going to be a cliffhanger?" And I did feel that like a little bit like I was second guessing the end of the episode. And I didn't necessarily like that. I won't knock off any points for it, but I will say that is something that does
Some
like.
weird pacing.
I gotta drop.
No worries, Max.
Okay.
Thanks,
All
guys.
right. Thank you,
No
Daniel.
worries.
Catch
Take
you
care.
next week.
Yep, see you
Catch
next
you
week.
next week at some point. Yeah. We had the scene in the tavern where the princeling crew came in and basically were like, yeah, we can party with the commoners, woo! And then we had that character who was like, yeah, I'm Viserys's bastard brother. I shouldn't tell you this because, you know, they might kill me, but here I am telling a random stranger over drinks that I'm a bastard heir to the throne,
Would you like a
which
spoiler
was
about him? Because
sure, don't mind.
I don't know his story completely, but I think they try and get him on a dragon at some point. I don't know how it goes. I think it goes well, but I can't remember now.
Well, I find it interesting that they're setting up dragon seeds. Like we've had the first, I think, in series mention of the term dragon seed, and that was from him. And I think that's obviously setting up probably for Alan more than himself, or whichever of the bastard brothers, whichever one of them becomes the dragon rider.
Yeah, I reckon Alan's going to be a dragon rider. I reckon that the Ulf or whatever his name is,
Rayna.
Rayna. Hang on, Rayna as in Ray, which Rayna? Rayna.
As
Oh,
in
Rayna.
Elena's
Oh
girls,
yeah. But
Layla
she.
can ride and Layna can't.
Yeah, Lena might get the one that she's got over in Essos. Or she might try. I mean, she might die trying to hatch it or something. So But also, one thing I did notice with Rhaenyra is that she does seem to be like the future of the house, which, so even though she kind of gets a little bit of a raw deal in that term, like what she is kind of doing, she's protecting the heirs to the throne. That's kind of like the most
Yeah,
important.
she's protecting the heir to the throne, and she's, I think, it'll be interesting. One of the things you kind of started saying, which I thought you were going to bring up, was that, like, politically, if there is an anti-dragon sentiment in the future, having an heir to the throne, no matter how tangential, if she is the only heir left and she doesn't have a dragon, that might give her a more compelling claim to the throne than a dragon rider in the future. That was one of the things that I thought you were going to mention. I can't remember what train of thought it was that led to that point, but I thought that was going to be your argument. And
Oh no, I
that's an
wasn't going to say
interesting
that. That's
thought,
a really
that
good idea, though.
not having a dragon rider might actually be a better claimant to the throne than someone who can ride a dragon in the amorphous future. So if she goes off with the younglings and, you know, fails to hatch a dragon, but the dragon sentiment in Westeros becomes, you know, very anti-nuke, then having someone who is the bloodline but not able to ride a dragon might actually be something in her favor.
Absolutely,
They had yet again in the conversation with the guy who was like, "Yeah, I'm totally a bastard of Viserys, or a bastard brother to Viserys." They had a couple of throwaway lines about no one being able to recognize royalty, and they've had that repeatedly where they didn't know who Helena was, and that I think was set up for Rhaenyra sneaking into King's Landing dressed as the nun. I think that was what that was setting up, as well as the dragon seeds aspect. I think it was setting up that Rhaenyra, if she's wearing non-queenly clothes, can basically go where she pleases. Like, she just looks like a person,
Yeah, I
which
mean
is
that was a
one
good
of the things
outfit.
that
I
it's one
wouldn't
of the
like.
things that they could do in this show that they wouldn't have been able to do in the books, because in the books, all Targaryens have purple eyes. So that's interesting to me, that this is one of the things that, because of a the re like the decision to not do contact lenses because it impedes the performance of the actors, they have actually managed to create nice little patterns for this story that they wouldn't be able to do
Well,
in the books.
possibly, but then
Because,
like there are Targaryen bastards with purple eyes, which doesn't seem to.
yeah, but it makes it harder.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to.
Again, we had royals recklessly cavorting with, like, you know, the king of the crown of King's Landing just randomly going to a brothel and a pub with like a bunch of like dumb shits for guards. Like, that kid deserved to die, basically. Like, he's just so stupid. Like, anyone could have just reached up and stabbed him in the back. And then it also had him like obviously disturbing the brothel workers, not obviously, he probably paid for whoever it was, one of his companions, to, you know, spend the night, but he was also interrupting service of other patrons. So that might again contribute to the anti-royalist feeling in King's Landing.
There'll be
I
a
really
commoner
enjoyed the
uprising, I tell you.
conversation. There will be. There was a really the conversation between Alicent and Rhaenyra in the crypt in the Incept was a little bit much, but it was nice to get again. It was concluding a lot of threads that had been set up.
It's like Silent Sister Act, or like I didn't mind it because I think
I didn't
like,
mind it.
but I know
There was
like
enough set up.
I mean, it's is it any more goofy than Arik and Eric? Like, don't get me
No,
wrong,
no.
it's a tragic story and all that kind of stuff. That, but it is it like it's it is the House of the Dragon humor where it's like, it borders on this ridiculous whimsy, but it doesn't go any further than a little bit, right?
And they had a throwaway line in that about, like, what if I scream? Well, if you scream, then we both die, basically, which again runs with the metaphor of the nuclear deterrent. Like, basically, if Rhaenyra were to stab Alicent, there's no way Rhaenyra would be able to get out of the crypt alive. If Alicent screams, then Rhaenyra would kill her, but then she would still die. So it's that kind of the way that they're having individuals mirror the wider metaphor. So the Blackwoods and the Brackens and the Blackwoods are the like micro version of the main battle. We have Alicent and Rhaenyra doing the micro version of the nuclear deterrent, which I found fun. The concessions of war. So basically, because Alicent was the one who said there's no chance of us going to peace now, means that Rhaenyra can be like, well, I have the moral high ground. I tried. I like literally, I was the last one putting out the olive branch, and that was thrown in my face. And it's interesting as well that there was a line in episode one from Daemon to Rhaenyra about like, did you get what you needed? Where he was being like, you've seen the body, now war. Do you want war? While what Alicent actually needed was what Rhaenyra actually needed was like the point where there was no other choice. Like she's not going to go to war until there is no other choice. And the fact that Alicent wasn't willing to give her a chance was that final line in the sand. Like she knew that that's the point of no return to her. Like there was a certain point where she could forgive, like or like pass the blame about the deaths of the children. She could compartmentalize, but the point where Alicent was like, no, she was like, okay, this is what I needed. I'm now to war.
Well, when she found out that Alicent doesn't know anything about the Song of Ice
Song of
and
Ice and
Fire,
Fire.
although possibly technically, like in theory, she shouldn't know anything about the song because it would go from
She
air
shouldn't
to
know.
air. But so I don't know how compelling that is, but like the fact that
Well, no, I think because like the thing is, she was surprised Daemon didn't know about the Song of Ice and Fire because it's passed from king to heir. But I don't think she was surprised that she didn't know it was the Song of Ice and Fire. It was that the surprise was what she's translated as Aegon was the king is a story. Like the surprise wasn't that Alicent didn't know. The surprise was discovering that was the wording. That makes sense?
Yeah, I mean it threw Alicent into question, or it threw her into self-doubt, which then started, chain of events.
Yeah, it spiraled. We had the scene where Baela and Jace were trying to do council meeting in Rhaenyra's stead, and no one was listening to Baela, even though she was doing all the work, and no one was listening to Jace, even though he was being relatively competent and a man, and no one was listening to Rhaenys, even though she was being a cool bitch. And then Lord Valerion just walked in, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah, you're in charge because you're a man with a dong." So I found it one of those like microcosms of again the gender politics not quite working, where you've got like you can kind of understand Baelor and Jace not being respected because they're young, despite the fact that they're both competent dragon riders. At the point where Rhaenys is also being disrespected, but then Corlys walks in with his boat and his limp. And everyone's like, oh yes, you can command the council of the queen. I found that to be just a little like it was just like a little salt in the wound of gender politics, which I
Although
enjoyed.
there is, I think there is a there is a there is a also a there could be an element of like Corlys is also the wealthiest man in Westeros, and so I think like it could be the case that a lot of people on that council respect wealth as well. It's
And I think they also respect someone with an absolute authority.
He's
Like,
old, he's got
all of
experience, and
them.
but then
Well,
so does
like.
Rhaenys, though.
Yeah, but I think Rhaenys and Jace and Baela were all. We are trying our best, but we will still defer to our mother. Like, we're waiting for Rhaenyra to come back. While Corlys was like. I don't care if Rhaenyra is here or not. Let's make some decisions.
Yeah, because he says in season one, he says you can't wait for the storm. You either get the hell out of there or face it. And they're like, and it's the rudderless thing. And then they say rudderless. It's like, oh, someone need a rudder steering? So I think maybe
Yeah.
they were going into that sort of like
That's what
sailing
we
metaphor.
that's what she said.
Just someone requiring a
I mean,
rudder.
talk like between Corlys and Rhaemira's pretty good relationship, I'm sure she's done some rudder steering in the past. I enjoyed again like the same sort of sarcasm from Alicent as in season one, where she was like, he was like, "Do you even love me?" And she's like, "Yeah, you idiot." And she had the line where she's like, "What thoughts would you have?" Where she's like, "You're just a dumb shit." And like trying to get Aegon to like listen to council members, and like the fact that he's sent away like all of the smart people who were on his side, and he's just surrounded himself with dumb things. Like, you know, she was queen regent for a long, or like acting queen for a long time. Her father was a really talented lord, and like she's like he and he doesn't look after his council. It was just really funny to me. Like, again, we were talking about season one, how it was so dour. That little those little moments of levity where she's like, "What? You're just so stupid. You're just so stupid."
Honest to goodness, the yeah, like I'm so glad they actually managed to bring in some good like pace changes and vibe changes. I honestly I didn't expect them to manage to like U-turn the only thing that I wish was different.
And
But
they did it.
yeah, well done to them.
They had the line fear versus rationality, like it's not fear, it's rational, which has
Yeah, that's
been
good.
kind of like the argument of a lot of the female characters in this, where it's like it's not emotional, like I can make a decision without it being an emotional one. But it's also interesting that obviously that was Alicent's brother's line, but what was actually happening was he wasn't seeing the whole plan. Like, the whole point of that thing was for them to be super visual to draw out a dragon. Like it was a trap. Which it makes sense not to necessarily share with everyone, but I feel like maybe Kristen could have shared the
I don't
information with him,
know
but I suppose they're
how
not well trusted.
utilitarian Cole is, but if he goes up to I'm just trying to find King's Land right. So if he goes up to like Rosby, Stokeworth, Duskendale and absorbs those armies into his forces, then does that mean that they are they undeclared? Are they loyal to Team
Well,
Black or?
what's interesting is if you say his plan all along, which presumably it was to make his way to Raven's Roost, which we know that there is a council member of Rhaemira's in Raven Roost, which attacking would draw out one of her side. And on his way, he can shanghai some armies which he's not sure of their 100% loyalty. Like, it's you get absorbed into my army, or you get put to the sword.
Where's
And
Raven's
he's got the
Roost?
perfect what's it called? Not Raven's Roost. What's the name of
Rook,
the
Rook's Rest.
battleground? Rook's Rest, sorry. So once he gets to Rook's Rest, he has filled up his army with people he doesn't necessarily trust, because he's done like you get put to the sword or you join the army. And then he's throwing them at the castle in full sight of open sky. So he's not sacrificing his own men to be dragon fodder. He's sacrificing the Knights of Duskendale and all the ones that he kind of absorbed on his way up. So it's like, for a dumb dude, he does have battle instinct. Like, it was really smart. My main frustration is the fact that Rhaenyra didn't see it. Like, she even picked up the piece off the map and was like, "But why are they attacking there?" And the answer is, draw out a dragon, so you shouldn't have done it.
Draw out a dragon. I think this is like this just demonstrates that Criston Cole at this point is in his element. I don't even dislike him that much as a character here. I think he's actually like, I mean, I dislike him as a character, but I think that he is like watching him politics in King's Landing, like He's not great in that regard.
He's
I mean,
political.
He's not political. He's weirdly emotional. He's not likable. But then he's like a fish out of water. He doesn't like being there, probably. He probably doesn't really like being a Kingsguard, because that's going to be boring as hell. Like, he appreciates that it's a cushy job, but, like, you know, he's probably itching for war. That's the one thing he's good at. And he's right in his element now. And even though, like, he's obviously a reprehensible person, I think that, like, it's in that context, as his character is amazing. Like, in terms of, I like how they do that. Like, I like how they take characters out of their comfort zones and they demonstrate what they're like in and out of the comfort zone. Another example, of course, mm-hmm. is Aemond, where, you know, he gets bullied and mocked on one hand, but on the other hand, he's feared and admired by others, you know, like depending on the context that he's put in. And like, yeah, like he has some emotional difficulties because, you know, he's seeking a mother figure in the madam of a brothel, but to be fair, it's better than seeking it with or doing whatever the fuck Aegon did, you know. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm honestly saying, like, you know, Aemon #24, you know, #Aemon 2024. Like, he's a better king. We all know it. We all know it. He's a bit ruthless, but you need that in a king. And he's logical and he's minded. He's got a big dragon.
He can speak Valyrian.
He can speak Valyrian, exactly. Like, you know, he's well educated, and he's probably good, and he understands, like, talking things through with the expert. He knows that Cole is a, you know, he's a veteran and a good strategic mind, and he's taken advice. He's taking counsel from him, and he's like, he's so knowledgeable that he has that seat at the council meeting, and people are just acting like he's got a council seat when he doesn't. Like, you know, but I think the show is deliberately trying to draw those two parallels between. But the thing is, I think that differs from the parallel between Viserys and Matt Smith. Hang on a minute. Daemon, thank you. Because Daemon would never have been a good king. Whereas, so it's like there's almost like the contrast there. Whereas, yes, Viserys, not necessarily the best king in the world, but he did reside over a long period of peace. And for the most part, like, he had the best, he had decent intentions, albeit ones that ended up going astray. And then, of course, you've got Daemon, who would have been an awful king, but he lusted after the power and the status and all the stuff that brought. Whereas with Aegon and Aemond, Aegon was the, you know, he was the rightful king that was, you know, as the Viserys analog. But the counter is that Aegon is the shit king and Aemond is the good king. No, I say good king as in, like, the necessary, like, you know, it's all about what makes a good king. Is it someone who's got a firm hand? Is it someone that's actually kind of got a soft touch? Or presumably it's knowing when to use what particular, you know, political lever at any given time. I think Aemond probably has a solid grasp of that, as well as a closer adherence to traditions and also, you know, like looking like a king, or like aesthetic, I guess. Sorry, I'm just rambling on. And
I mean, in terms of, like, talking of aesthetics, one of the other points that I came up with was we had the throwaway line where he, Aegon, briefly chastised his Kingsguard, who he just took to a brothel for, like, not holding their vow of chastity, which reminded me of how in Game of Thrones Sansa sort of parroted these mantras about, you know, like, these cliches about scripture and book, like, mythological couples and good virtues and all these stuff that Alison then uses as a shield. And obviously Aegon's been raised by Alison to continually use that as a shield, use the kind of title of faith and the air of like being pure as her, like, shield and her political stance, as well as Kristen, who also did that, where he was so hyper focused on the presentation of purity that he didn't really care for the actual act of purity. And so Aegon's in a position now where his role models are both people who would say, wear the white, do the thing. But but his guards laugh at him because they're like, yeah, totally, mate, we'll be virgins from now on.
Yeah.
Just took us to a brothel. So I enjoyed that from the perspective that he's basically been raised more by Kristen than ever he was raised by Viserys. You can understand why that whole strife is an issue, and also you can see why Christian is so mortified by the end of this episode. Like, he's gonna like what's Alicent gonna think with the fact that both of her sons, like one of them's presumably dead or injured, and the other one is at least partially responsible, if not mostly responsible.
That's kind of interesting, actually. Yeah, like the Aemond has I it seems yeah Aemond has like a father figure in Criston Cole, which but he doesn't have a mother figure. So yeah, that kind of tracks really well. Yeah, I think and that's also kind of, yeah, that's ironic considering his relationship with Alicent, like, which is also interestingly sort of matched against the black side
Yeah, the
and
Strongs and
the
Rhaenyra.
Strongs and all that goes. So
Yeah, it's all poetry. So yeah, most of my last notes are about Rhaenys being a badass.
I love
What's
it.
Corlys gonna do? Like,
He's gonna
Corlys
go
is gonna
mad.
be he's gonna be
Ballistic.
properly ticked off. And Rhaenys, I don't know, like, let me know if I, like, for me it was absolutely blatant at the point where she strapped herself to Maelys and then turned back around. She was like, okay, I'm going down in battle, this is my final go at. So for me that was like she's conceding that the only way to maintain her loyalty to Rhaenyra is to throw down with Vhagar and die. Like, it was,
It's
you
two
fully
on
accepted
one.
that.
Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I, you
But
know, like
she
it.
did seriously damage Sunfire, and then Sunfire got mooted by Vhagar.
And
Could have
but in.
fled. Like, she could have fled at the point where she Sunfire went down initially. She could have gotten out of there, but she didn't. What do you think her thought process was with that? Because I think it was the I'm going to go out in the glory of battle and I'll go out on my own terms.
I it's kind of tough to say. I mean, there's nothing to say that she would have even made it back to Dragonstone because Aemond's dragon, they're both of like are they both of comparable size, Rhaenys and Aemond's dragon?
Maelys is the biggest of Rhaenyra's set, but in comparison to Vhagar, like
So
Vhagar was
Vhagar.
like this. Ray, I'd say Vhagar's. If we say Vhagar's about there, I'd say Maelys is about there, and then all of the like adult dragons. So like Caraxes is probably about the size of Maelys, so not far off. And then you have like Caraxes, not Caraxes, Syrax, and then you have all of like the baby hatchlings who are like here. So like baby hatchlings here, Vhagar out to here, and then Maelys would have been somewhere like probably a maximum of a th two thirds of the size, maybe a half. Like, and you have to remember that, like, in her, I really enjoy the different dragon designs. All the different dragon designs, like they're so varied. They all look right and they all look part of the same world, and yet so different. Like, I really like how, I don't know what Baylor's dragon's name is, a wind storm dancer, wind dancer, something dancer. Like, they've got like the sort of like almost like gecko shaped head. It's got a very sort of square, squat head, while obviously Caraxes is like a little snaky worm creature. And Syrax looks quite like
Oh,
Dany's
Moon Dancer.
dragons. Moondancer. And then like obviously Sunfire looks very beautiful, and like Vhagar looks like a giant, like they just look like an iguana. And I love how they like somehow these all look like they look like different breeds of dog, in that you can't comprehend how certain breeds of dogs can mate, but actually they are all part of the same. They can crossbreed, and that is nuts to me that they can have that much diversity and all seem part of the same universe.
But they are, I mean, a lot of them are similar in, enough that like the scorpion peep operators are like, you know, make sure you got a solid bead that it's one of theirs and not one of ours.
Well,
Yeah.
again,
Or,
so what I was expecting initially from this battle was the foreshadowing that was a it's a trap, it's a trap. Was I was expecting, I was expecting it to be scorpions hidden in the woods because that's what they were cutting down the trees for. Meleys to turn up, but then potentially Aegon to turn up, and them to shoot bolts and hit the wrong one.
Yeah, that certainly
That's
could
what I was
have.
expecting.
I we could have,
So it was
yeah.
nice to be
It'll happen.
upset,
I
and I
reckon
still
it'll
think
happen.
at some point the bolts are going to hit the wrong dragon. I
Yeah.
think that's going to happen.
Guaranteed. They're
Maybe not.
foreshadowing it. You don't wheel out Chekhov's scorpion without it something like that happening, right? It's
I made a note that Sunfire was on fire. Just because we've already talked about the boiling blood, the Song of Ice and Fire being like briefed out air, like parent to air, which I found interesting, and the fact that she also stated like I'm not letting out the nukes for no reason, like I wouldn't let, like the idea that she wouldn't let out the nuke, like because Alicent brought up the Song of Ice and Fire. The re part of the incentive to go to war is not fighting for a crown. There's a perhaps an argument to be had that Rhaenyra wouldn't go to war just for the sake of her own prestige. She will do it to protect her father's belief in the Song of Ice and Fire. And so that's the thing that she needed. It wasn't the thing she needed to release the nukes was the protection of that mythology. And I like the idea that she the horrors I released are not for the crown alone feels almost like this, it feels like very Oppenheimer. I feel like Oppenheimer could say something along the lines of like the horrors I've released are not for my own benefit or something like that, or like for my own prestige. It feels like the person who created the nuke. And last but not least, there was a throwaway line about my lord, we should get you to cover at the point where Vega turned up. And I was just like, well, there's no cover from that giant grandma gecko. And thus endeth my notes.
Awesome. Well, I'm sorry you've ran half hour over your hard limit. So
It's me. What is sleep?
Oh, I'm
I
sorry,
don't do
Jenny.
good sleep.
I
It's
know I said
fine,
this. I
it's
know I
fine.
said this 2 weeks ago, but like, I'm going to try super hard to get us started earlier. Max could have started earlier, and
It's
he's
all
on a
right.
different time zone. I just busy times for me. But like, anyway,
Yeah, I mean,
thank you for all of
fortunately, I'm not on an early shift tomorrow. Like, I'm on. We're on summer work now, so I have to leave and start work at 6:45 now. And
Oh,
if I'm
that's
on an
still
early shift,
stupid. Oh, Jenny, you're not as young as you used to be. I know that's a horrible thing to
I
say, but like,
know,
I know I'm not as
I
young as I used to
know.
be. It's like you can't.
I get wrecked by it. But fortunately, I'm on late shift tomorrow, so I don't have to be at work until 12, which means that I don't have to leave until 10:30, so I can lie in.
That's
So I
okay. I
might,
mean,
like, if I go to sleep like right now, I could get like an 8 hour sleep.
nice.
Like
Well,
an
that's yeah.
adult.
Yeah, I got yeah. Oh, well, anyway, thank you very much for all of your insights and notes and banter.
As always, I'm like, I don't think I have anything insightful to say.
2 hours later, two almost 3 hours later.
Yeah.
But
We
you
were
know,
covering two episodes.
and we were covering two episodes.
And
That's our yeah.
they were chunky episodes as well. There was a lot going on. There was lots of moving
Yeah, like
parts.
every scene has a purpose in it, and it's yeah. No throwaway lines.
No. Like I really enjoy the fact that like there is like there's almost no fat on the show.
And
Like particularly
the
in the last
episode.
couple of seasons of Game of Thrones, like
Oh,
there
it's a
was a
lot,
lot of
yeah.
fat. There was a lot of stuff that they could
There's a
have
lot of fat,
trimmed or
despite
cut or just not
they were charging through it. How could it be? It's both. It's bad on contradicting fronts. But there we go. But yeah, like there was stuff in it
It
that
was a
didn't need to be in
perfect
it, and then.
microcosm of crap.
Oh.
How can it be burnt and undercooked? How can it have so much fat and also so little nutrition?
They get the trouble is that Dan and Dave just gave up on it. I'm so glad they didn't
Yeah.
let them touch Star Wars in the end. They would have ruined Star Wars. Star Wars, I'm loving the Acolyte. I think that's
Like I'm not thinking about Game of Thrones. Like I keep saying it, House of the Dragon is the healing salve for the trauma of the last couple of seasons of Game of Thrones. Every single, in the same way that I feel like at least the first book of Star Wars, the first of the modern Star Warses was a competent answer to every single person who's gone, the stormtroopers can't aim, and it just felt like a rebuttal, and it's a good rebuttal, and it's not like a it's a rebuttal that's so good it stands on its own feet. It's like, okay, you didn't like unnecessary SA. Let's turn that around. Let's turn away from the male gaze and have a female perspective story that's not preachy. It's a story about people with female-centric focus. But it's not like, I can't remember which, I watched the live action Peter Pan
All right.
just for funsies.
I
And
didn't know there
it's
was one.
like the it, there's a reason why it's forgotten. It's kind of crappy. But they turned it, instead of into a story about people growing up, they turned it into like a, you're a young feminist, Wendy. And I love feminism in theory, but sometimes it is done poorly. And they have like a line where Wendy gets the power to fly while Peter Pan doesn't, and they're like, you've got the Pan's power, and she's like, this was power is never belonging to any boy. And I was just like, oh no, oh no. So
It's a bit, yeah.
House of the Dragon, like a gender focused story that's not feminist preachy, give me that any day.
But it
The
needs to,
amount of diversity is phenomenal in comparison to Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones was lacking. This is great. Great actors that hopefully will have great roles in the future as well. Taking the time to tell proper stories. Allegory is back. Consequences are back. I love it.
Pacing and tone, particularly, specifically in season two. I'd almost want to say to like rec you know recommending it is start at season two almost. Like I
Mean,
mean, we
there's a.
both really enjoyed season one, but like it
I
just
still say
nails
start
season.
season one just because, in a way, I'd be really interested to talk to someone. I think I said this last year, to talk to someone who has only watched House of the Dragon, because there's all of the flaws of Game of Thrones. There are some core fundamentals of the lore set up. So, Targaryen dragons, Targaryen incest, the location of the North. Those little things that are woven into Game of Thrones, so you can automatically understand those core principles by the time you're in House of the Dragon. I think it would be a bit of a struggle, considering how much we who have obsessed over this series are struggling with all of the similar names and the repeated names and the similar, the incest chains
That's a good
and the
point,
like
yeah.
the, like I someone who's coming in just to House of the Dragon, don't understand the core physics of the universe, which is
You're right.
dragon
I'm.
hatching, Targaryen incest, the Red Keep, the Kingsguard, the Small Council, the North, the South, Pentos. If you don't have that core mental geography, I don't know how you would be able to tether yourself into the incest spaghetti
Well,
to work out this story.
I mean, it. I think it's interestingly telling that that HBO have released character guides, dragon guides, and a map for their world. Now, some people would say that's an admission of failure. You've written your story too complicated. Some people also might say that George Lucas at the beginning of the Star Wars films just throws up a prologue synopsis. Is just like that's almost like breaking every rule in cinema, but for some reason kind of works.
It
Same here.
worked.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I've had an interesting conversation. I can't remember if I mentioned this in a previous podcast, but when episode one came out of season two of House of the Dragon, I was chatting with one of my colleagues. He's from a different department, and he had watched season one, but hadn't obsessed in the way that we had. He'd watched it casually. And it's been 2 years, and he was like, "Oh yeah. There's the cool guy with the scar on his eye, and he works for the good guys, right? The good guys are the ones with the blonde. I hate the red-headed girl, and the red-headed girl is the one who's like, is she like?" And he'd had some aspects remembered, but he'd confused like some of the greens were on the black side, and some of the blacks were on the green side, and like he'd also was, saying the good guys and the bad guys. And yes, we are skewed towards rooting for the blacks, and that is.
Oh, I think I've lost Jenny. Oh, one second. Let's see if we can get her back. I hope that's not my internet. Right, let's find out. Let's see. Okay. Right, well, Discord appears to have shat the bed, so I'm sure we'll catch up with Jenny in the next episode. But thank you very much for joining us. I mean, it's nearly 3 hours, so if you're not sick of us already, then we'll be back in a week's time. So thank you very much for watching, and toodaloo.